We live in a more dangerous world in 2025. The threat of anti-Semitism, as we have seen, is very real.
So we're talking about the physical jihad, the physical struggling against the enemies of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Threats of other occurrences, such as the rise in the far right.
There will come a day that we will see far more radical extremists and terrorists coming out of Europe because of lack of decision-making, trying to be politically correct. I'm sorry, but that's pure ignorance.
Director General of Asia has warned about a range of threats, be it anti-Semitism, the rise of right-wing extremist groups as well.
Just like Israel, Australia does not have a right to exist.
The government is prepared to take whatever action is necessary. Included in that is the need for tougher gun laws.
So why aren't we addressing anything here? Why not here?
When you understand the Quran and you understand that it is a takeover manual of society in the phases.
I have also had the tremendous fortune to travel the world, and as part of that experience, to learn about the goodness and beauty of Islam, how it is practiced every day by well over a billion Muslims worldwide, a faith of peace and tolerance and great diversity.
The Prophet says, the first thing you do is call them to Islam. If they refuse, then tell them Allah obliged upon you to pay taxation. In return, when enemy comes and attack your country, you don't fight. We Muslims protect you.
In the battlefield, you're giving us jizya, and in exchange in jizya, what can happen is, if an outsider attacks you guys, we're going to protect you as well.
So that's how it works. The imam out of the Muslim Brotherhood is the military commander. And he tells you how to vote, and he does it all. And then if you don't flee the town they've taken over as a no-go zone, then they come and they tell you, give us money.
Do you think it's fair to kill me because I got the conclusions right or wrong?
If Sharia law states that, then it should be fair for me.
When you start seeing these imams just suddenly in Europe, in Australia, in New Zealand, in Canada, in the U.S., everywhere, saying, okay, our numbers have hit 5, 6, 7% in this country, start killing the Christians and the Jews.
And so make jihad against them.
What is your duty as a member of the Ummah now that you are also an American? It is our physical jihad duty to fight the entire earth until we enter it into the Ummah.
To be honest, for us Muslims living in the West, yes, our jihad is to establish the deen of Allah through all means necessary.
We have had a tradition of toleration. These people are not tolerating us. So you don't tolerate us, we want you out of this country. Right? Because this country is fed up with your, oh, we must be nice to everybody. Well, I'm not particularly nice to people that crossed the border, invaded another country, and murdered over 1,200 people.
We just had Benny Thompson, ranking Democrat in the House.
Madam Secretary, you and the gentleman from NCTC referenced the unfortunate accident that occurred with the National Guardsman being killed.
You think that was an unfortunate accident?
I mean,
it was a terrorist.
No, wait. Look, I'll get it straight. Then you can.
He shot our National Guardsman in the head.
Look, Ms. Chairman, will you direct the witness to allow me to ask my question?
You hate me,
yes,
for the sake of Allah.
I hate you for the sake of Allah.
All right.
I hate you for the sake of Allah. Every Christian, I hate you all for the sake of Allah. Any Jew, any Christian, I hate you all for the sake of Allah.
He hates me, yes, for the sake of Allah.
You hate these bosses and the other bosses.
Would you kill me if you get a chance?
If we're what, I would chop your head off.
Everyone was just running, and there were bullets, and there were so many of them, and we were really scared.
And then you've got the ultra-leftist police of Australia. I mean, you know, they're total globalists. It's all run by the World Economic Forum, just like Canada, just like the UK. It's the very same system. People are great. They have horrible, evil governments that just engage in mass fraud, theft of the elections. It's just, it's where we're going to be.
That is the latest from John Bound. Find and share that at band.videoinfowars.com. We have new footage out about the Bondi massacre. We'll show you that on the other side.
challenging all of you to support the broadcast, keep us on air while you get great products, and it's a win-win. We need funds, we are in the red, and we've got to be able to continue our legal battles. We've got to be able to continue to buy new product going in the future. We've got to continue with the funding to build the Alex Jones backup network in case they're able to shut us down. I cannot do it without you. So now is the time to go to thealexjonesstore.com and do your final Christmas shopping there. Anywhere in the United States, if you order by Friday, you will get it before Christmas. So get your orders in now. Do your Christmas shopping with us, but really give yourself the gift of health with our creatine gummies, the highest quality type of creatine, 5 milligrams. That's a daily serving per gummy. Huge container of them. Such a great deal. This is the best creatine out there. There's so many other great products and a whole bunch of other sales and deals. You can become a subscriber right now on any product, canceling time, and it reorders every month and get 50% off on all future orders. The widest selection of t-shirts, hoodies, ball caps, sweaters, many of them limited edition at thealexjonesstore.com.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com.
Annihilate.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live this Wednesday afternoon. It is the 17th of December, 2025. We got a lot to talk about, a lot of video to show you. We'll be joined in the second hour by Carlin Borischenko. We're going to talk about what the communists have planned for us. We'll talk about some of the arrests that were made from the Turtle Island Liberation Front and get a breakdown as to what that group exactly is and whether we can expect more attempted terrorism from Antifa in the near future. Very excited to talk to her. I'll take your calls in the third hour. We'll begin today, as we do every day, with our Daily Dispatch. All right, here it is, folks, your Daily Dispatch for Wednesday, the 17th of December, 2025. Russia is a threat to the UK, and our sons and daughters must be ready to fight, Armed Forces Chief warns. It's kind of an uncomfortable way to phrase it. You mean the daughters that you've let be raped by the millions and the sons that you throw in jail for complaining about it? Yeah, I don't think Russia is the big concern, actually, right now. Making the case for a society-wide approach to defense and deterrence, Chief of Defense Staff Sir Richard Knighton said the situation is more dangerous than I had known in my career. My gosh, people who are not soldiers, sailors, or aviators to nevertheless invest their skills and money on building up national resilience. I'm sorry, I thought the nation state was a thing of the past. I thought we were moving more towards globalism. I thought the whole point of the EU was that it superseded the nation state. I thought you've spent the last several decades systematically eliminating nationalist impulses from your society, but now that you want to send everybody to die in a pointless war with Russia, you're trying to invoke nationalism again. Sure hope nobody's falling for this. Meanwhile, speaking of the UK and how they're genuinely not worth fighting for, Twitter user is jailed for 18 months for 2 anti-immigrant tweets made after Christmas market car attack. The tweets themselves were viewed just 33 times. In other words, the tweets themselves were less impactful than would have been if he'd stood up and said it at a bar. at a packed pub, he would have had a larger audience. He posted 2 anti-immigrant tweets that were viewed just 33 times. Luke Yarwood, 36, received an 18-month sentence after tweeting in the wake of a Christmas market attack in Magdeburg, Germany in December 2024, his posts were reported to the police by Yarwood's own brother-in-law, who he did not get along with. And we got more stories like that out of the UK. It really is becoming unrecognizable. And there's more to tell about Europe later in the show. Meanwhile, Jack Smith tells House Committee about his team's investigations of Trump. Smith told lawmakers in closed-door interview Wednesday that his team of investigators developed proof beyond a reasonable doubt that President Donald Trump had criminally conspired over the results of the 2020 election, according to portions of his opening statement obtained by the Associated Press. My God. My God. And yet Trump got away with it. Incredible. Now, a few things I'll say about this. One, Jack Smith was never duly authorized to do any investigation in any of these cases, so there's that. You would think it wouldn't matter until it comes to Alina Haba or Trump's attorney that he picked to go after James Comey, when all of a sudden the indictments are thrown out because they didn't go through the process, arguably, even though in the case of Trump, they actually did go through the appropriate process. Not so with Jack Smith. It doesn't matter, though. It doesn't matter because the Democrats don't abide by laws. They just don't do that sort of thing. So they get to get away with it. But that would be one issue with Jack Smith being assigned to investigate this stuff. The other thing would be that he wasn't assigned to investigate a crime. He was assigned to investigate Donald Trump and to go after him in any number of crimes. Okay, that's another egregious violation of our system of law and order. But then on top of all of that is the fact that the 2020 election was stolen and Donald Trump trying to overturn the results could otherwise be rephrased as Donald Trump tried to get the accurate result of the election in 2020. So sort of depends on your view. If you see Donald Trump trying to change the results of an election, it kind of depends on whether the results of the election were accurate or valid or not. If they're not, then what he did by trying to change the results of the election was in fact trying to actually have a real election. Meanwhile, we have this. Dan Bongino clearing out his office ahead of FBI exit, according to the New York Times. Deputy FBI Director Dan Bongino is reportedly clearing out his office ahead of an imminent departure from the Bureau and a potential return to the MAGA media circuit, the New York Times has reported. Bongino told his associates he could leave as soon as this week or as late as mid-January. People familiar with his plans told the Times on Wednesday he has not yet made a formal announcement. I don't even know what to make of this, to be honest with you. I mean, what is he going to do? He's going to go back to being a podcaster and saying all the stuff that he used to say, because that's sort of inconsistent with what he said as the deputy director. Is he going to come out and tell us what actually happened? Or has he been subject to like some insane brain wiping blackmail operation and he's just done for the rest of his life? Like, he's just gonna, I don't know. I honestly don't know what he's gonna do. I'm not sure what he's been doing. Seems like kind of a failed experiment of sorts. Finally, Donald Trump will be giving a primetime address tonight at 9 Eastern, 8 Central time. We don't actually know what it's about, but according to Tucker Carlson, Trump will announce war with Venezuela tonight. According to Tucker Carlson, a member of Congress told him that Congress was briefed yesterday that a war with Venezuela is coming and that it will be announced tonight. President Trump is due to give an address from the Oval Office at 9 p.m. Eastern. So, promises made, promises kept, right? We all remember on the campaign trail how Donald Trump would rail endlessly about the need to start another war, this time with Venezuela. And we all stood up and cheered and said, yes, war, that's what we want. That's why we voted for Donald Trump. Endless, senseless war on behalf of Israel. Please, Donald, do it for us. I mean, I'm honestly so torn about Trump. I cannot figure out what he's doing. I was watching Alex Jones and Nick Fuentes, and, you know, I think they're as on the money as anybody else is about, like, what the hell's happening with Donald Trump. I think, you know, Nick's interpretation of the fact that, like, he knows his poll numbers are going down, so he's trying to, like, use insults and, you know, things like that on online to try to gin up his base a little bit, and it's just not working. Doesn't have the right targets, you know, and it's kind of like, that was never the thing that we liked most about him. That was kind of like a cherry on top, was like, okay, he's got all these great policies, but also he can destroy people with a single, you know, funny tweet. It was always kind of like a cherry on top, but that wasn't the substance of why we like Trump. It seems like the substance is all gone. But then I still have this understanding that, like, Trump is not fully controlled. And I know he's not. I don't know where the line is drawn exactly, but how many times have we seen evidence, even just in this year, of the obvious contention between Donald Trump and the deep state, the powers that be. And like, he's not serving them endlessly, but he is serving them. And he hasn't completely given over all of our sovereignty to the unelected spy masters. But he's also doing a lot of what they want. So I really don't know what to make of it. And even yesterday, and I swear I didn't think I was going to go to these clips, but now that I'm mentioning them, we might have to pull them in. Because Donald Trump was at this Hanukkah lighting ceremony. And he's doing the thing that he does where it sounds like he's praising Israel. But it's also the type of thing that you say if you criticize Israel, right? He's giving these addresses where he's going, you know, Israel used to run things and now they don't run things as much anymore. And, you know, they should be in charge. And like part of me is hearing it and it's like, you're not supposed to say this, right? You're not supposed to say Israel runs the country, even if you're saying it in a positive way. And just the way he phrases things, I'm like, is he messing with them? Like, what is actually happening here? I've done so much for Israel. I call them Christmas Hanukkah dinners. This is so embarrassing. It's the whole thing is weird. But then again, the whole thing with Israel in total is weird. I've heard the same sentiment from like 10 different people in the last few days. That's just like, are they trying to make us hate them? Like, why would you go so out of your way? Like Randy Fine comes out and says we should ban all Muslims from America. And it's like, that's not a real policy, right? That's just not possible at all. It's also obviously not something that you would say about any other group of people. And to me, the obvious comeback to that is let's ban all Jewish people, right? You just take that, you go, okay, if you're willing to say this about this religion, can we say it about other religions? And then it's like, so he almost like sets you up. It's like, we should ban all Muslims. Of course, the response, knee-jerk reaction, well, okay, why don't we ban all Jews while we're at it? And then it becomes, oh my God, Congressman Randy Fine attacked an anti-Semitic tirade by a man who says that all Jews should be expelled from America. And it's like, Is this a deliberate feedback loop? It seems like it is. I mean, it's hard to go this badly for this long. So I don't know what the psychological motivations of all these people are, but Trump, I understand, maybe least of all, why he would start a war with Venezuela. And maybe we'll see that during the presentation tonight. But if I was a father whose son was on an aircraft carrier right now, I would want a better reason for why my son's risking his life. I would want to know a little bit more context as to why my progeny may be eliminated on some godforsaken jungle in South America. Like, what is the actual purpose? What are we actually doing here? I don't think the reasons that we're actually doing things are the type of thing they want to tell everybody. Some Republican lawmakers call for mass expulsion of American Muslims. Comments from Randy Fine and Senator Tommy Tuberville reflect a brazen Islamophobic sentiment being voiced by some in the party. Again, it's like, you just can't have it both ways. You can't have it both ways. You can't say stuff like that and then also be calling for, you know, brutal crackdowns on so-called anti-Semitism because people don't like what Israel's doing. Just very completely inconsistent. This was a video that went viral from the thing last night. Clip number 5, Mark Levin to Donald Trump, celebrating him as our first Jewish president. Let's watch, I guess.
And I said, this is our first Jewish president.
Yeah.
Now he's the first Jewish president to serve two not consecutive presidencies. We thank you for everything.
That's right. Bad things happened on the second one. Namely, the election was rigged.
Yes.
And we found out, and you see that happening. But
And you are the greatest president.
Thank you very much.
And God bless you. I miss you.
Wow, amazing. Incredible stuff. Our first Jewish president. I don't even know what that means anymore. Jewish is as Jewish does, I guess. Who knows? Whatever. We'll move on. We have a lot of stories to talk about today. And, you know, maybe I just need to, like, lay out all of them, like, just sort of go through the headlines, because I could spend an hour on all these, but they all sort of point to the same unavoidable conclusion that just, like, the Western world is under complete concerted attack and nobody is doing absolutely anything to combat any of it. It's beyond infuriating. How about this, just from Europe? Paris cancels open-air concert at Champs-Élysées. How do you pronounce that? Champs-Élysées over security threat. The normally proud and defiant French are waving their white flag in the face of migrant terror. Paris has shockingly decided to dim the lights on its annual New Year's Eve fete along the iconic Champs-Élysées. Thank you, crew. The massive midnight concert that drew a jubilant crowd of a million people last year, with festivities having drawn throngs to the most beautiful avenue in the world for six decades, has been scrapped and replaced by a pre-recorded video to be viewed in the safety and comfort of French living rooms. And of course, if it's at all similar to the French production during the Olympics, then I imagine it'll be some sort of blasphemous abomination featuring a transgender demon in the place of Jesus. I don't know. I'm just speculating here. But it just seems like the whole of French culture has been cannibalized, destroyed, and eliminated. In fact, there's some crazy stories about this. I didn't really intend to start on Europe, but while we're here, while we're at it, I got a bunch of crazy stories about it. And I didn't print it out, but if the crew can find the new stained glass windows that they're replacing in the Cathedral of Notre Dame. And it's just this incredibly ugly mural celebrating diversity, replacing these medieval works of art. It's just absolutely insane. And why they are doing this, I can't really tell. And, you know, we have the Bound video in the first five. Yeah, they literally turn the stained glass windows into murals about diversity. Now, I'm not going to tell you who donated the money for these murals, but it wouldn't surprise you. Now, so John Bound makes this report about Islam and the way they're taking over. And I think it was actually on Rex Jones's show, The Gray Area. He was interviewing my co-host on Moonbase Live, John from Lebanon. And they're talking about Muslims taking over. And John tells a funny story about a video out of Lebanon where it's a Sunni guy just on the street of Lebanon being interviewed. Sunni being the more radical Saudi Arabian aligned traditionalist, i.e. 7th century barbarian form of Islam. Anyway, they're interviewing him. And the guy interviewing goes, so would you ever want to have like an Islamic caliphate here in Lebanon? And the Sunni guy starts looking over his shoulder right away and going, no, I never said that. And I wouldn't say that. We don't want that. Friend John, like, see, it's so you can live with Muslims. You just have to keep them in their place, basically. Basically, you have to let them know you're not going to start a caliphate here. You're not going to be in charge here. And if you try to do that, the minute you start thinking about doing that, we're going to come down on you like a ton of bricks. So the Sunnis in Lebanon don't even try. They don't try to brag. They have their own neighborhoods. They have their own things they do. But Lebanon is this sort of triple entente. They have, you know, one main position in the government has to always be Christian. The other main position has to always be Shia. The other main position has to always be Sunni. That's the way it's set up because Lebanon has gone through a series of absolutely brutal civil wars that they don't want anything to do with anymore. So no side gets to dominate. There's a plurality. It's going to stay that way. And the minute one side, one faction starts wanting to take over another, they get crushed by the other factions. It's kind of just the mindset you need to have. And it's not like brutal or oppressive in the slightest. It's literally just saying, you can live here, you can be here, you can pray here, you can worship here. That's all fine. The minute that you think you're going to be in charge, we're going to brutally crush you. So fair warning, don't do that. Don't try to take over. Don't try to establish a caliphate. Don't try to impose your laws on the other people or we will crush you. And that's just how it needs to be treated. Same thing in Europe, same thing everywhere else. This would all be fine. I've talked, you know, Qatar. A lot of talk about Qatar. One thing doesn't get talked a lot about, their immigration policy. The population of the landmass of Qatar is 90% foreigner. 90% foreigner. You would think that would leave them in a position like the UK, but 10 times worse, right? With all the trouble in the UK, the percentage of people that are, you know, native Britons is still very high. So what? How is Qatar doing it? Well, they're doing it because they say you can come to Qatar, you can live here, you can work here, you can educate yourself here. You will never, ever, ever be a citizen of Qatar. It's just never going to happen. And while you're here, you have to benefit us. You have to help us. You have to build up our institutions. You have to bring in money or develop money or bring in investments, you know, through your economic activities. And if not, you're out. You can be here and you serve us. You can live here, but you play by our rules. And the minute that they don't want to play by the rules or they don't want to contribute or they want to live off the dole, you just kick them out. You just say, no, all right, never mind. We had an agreement. You broke it. We're done here. It's a very simple way to be. It's not rude. It's not anything. This is just how it is. But if you don't have the balls to actually impose that, to actually make good on the threats, then, you know, the people are just going to walk all over you. So in France, students are given exams that are, this is another one. It takes place in France, but it's actually just about internalized bias against men. Because apparently they did a test in France where they first hid the identity of people and then showed the sex. And it turns out people grade boys lower than girls. I'll find the article in just a second, but I don't even know how to describe it because it's so strange. There's almost an anti-inquisition going on right now in France where government surveyors are going around to Catholic schools to make sure they're not being too Catholic. It's very weird. I'll have to find the exact article. But, like, it's not just that the European culture is fading away because the people are being replaced. People in charge of Europe are actively dismantling the culture on purpose. Yeah, there's the gender biases. No, I'll find the one about France here in the break, and then I'll keep talking about what's going on in Europe because it really is, like, deliberate. I mean, it's like you have to try to screw your people over this much. Here's another headline from UK. Illegal immigrants to the UK will now receive Gold Star NHS dental care, something that only a very small portion of actual Britons get to take advantage of. Foreign criminals and illegal migrants are now going to receive Gold Star NHS dental services despite three quarters of UK adults not having access to similar treatments. So they're now actively providing the illegal immigrants benefits over and above what 75% of UK natives receive in government benefits. Isn't that lovely? Isn't that nice? We need a worldwide 1776. We need a worldwide awakening to throw off the chains of these governments, this global New World Order system that is really close to successfully snuffing out the European people as a whole. We'll be right back.
Ladies and gentlemen, I cannot do this without you. You're the reason we're here. You're our sponsor. You are what keeps us on air. And we are launching today through the 23rd of December, the final days of Christmas sale at theolishowstore.com. 60% off on our best-selling ultramethylene blue, Irish sea moss gummies, and Shilajit gummies, and more. If you haven't tried our ultramethylene blue that is the strongest, best out there that we found, bar none, you're crazy. What it does for your mitochondria, your energy, your stamina, with no letdown, is insane. It's so good for you. Just research the studies. We have medical grade. We have the best. And you've seen all our guests and others come in here, and they're just blown away by it, including those who are already taking methylene blue. They're like, wow, this is way stronger, way better. It's amazing. I'm challenging all of you. I'm challenging everybody to support the broadcast keep us on air while you get great products, and it's a win-win. We need funds. We are in the red. I met with accountants this morning. Not too bad, but we're there. And we've got to be able to continue our legal battles. We've got to be able to continue to buy a new product going in the future. We've got to continue with the funding to build the Alex Jones backup network in case they're able to shut us down. I cannot do it without you. So now is the time to go to thealexjonesstore.com and do your final Christmas shopping there. Anywhere in the United States, if you order by Friday, you will get it before Christmas. So get your orders in now. Do your Christmas shopping with us, but really give yourself the gift of health with our creatine gummies, the highest quality type of creatine, 5 milligrams. That's a daily serving per gummy. Huge container of them. Such a great deal. This is the best creatine out there. There's so many other great products. You can become a subscriber right now on any product, cancel any time, and get 50% off on all future orders in perpetuity until you decide to cancel. The widest selection of t-shirts, hoodies, ball caps, sweaters, many of them limited edition, over 700 designs at thealexjonesstore.com. So my challenge to all of you is this. Get a bottle of ultramethylene blue for 60% off right now, and then you're going to be blown away and reorder it. You've heard all the people call in with their testimonials. This is the real deal. The best salesmen sell the best products. I promote and sell freedom. I promote and sell stopping the globalists. You know my information is the most accurate out there. Why on earth would you think that I would tell you this will change your life? The Shilajit, the Irish Sea Moss, the bovine colostrum, ultimate life force, spike protein, cardiovascular detox. All these are kick-butt products. TheAlexJonesStore.com. Please do your Christmas shopping there. We need your support. It's a win-win for everybody. You keep this operation. It's a true thorn on the side of the globalists on the air. And separately, the classic nitric boost. Dr. Judy Mikovits, you know, I didn't even know she knew about it. She bought it. So this is the best formula for your heart and for spike protein and for everything else. And men notice it in the morning when they wake up. It is back in stock at InfoWarsStore.com exclusively. InfoWarsStore.com, Nitric Boost. All of you need these products. Take action now.
Whoa, dude, is that methylene blue? This house really knows me. Oh, wow, Shilajit gummies. I gotta hide these from Melania. She loved them bigly. These sure taste great, and they're good for me, too. You can buy me now at thealexjonesstore.com.
Ho, 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 ho! Merry Christmas! If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
This is the War Room. We got a couple breaking videos I want to bring you here. One from Thomas Massie giving a address on the floor of Congress. The other from Donald Trump making a statement about Dan Bongino. So we'll go to those in just a second. I do want to remind you to go to thealexjonesstore.com to support absolutely everything that we do here, which will continue to be shape the paradigm. I remember back in 2017 or 18, there's an interview that Alex was doing with somebody for a documentary or something. He says, you know, we shifted the paradigm, you know, three or four times already, you know, the latest being the Donald Trump paradigm shift. And, you know, it was almost like the mission has been successful, but we're not done yet. And it was almost this exhausted kind of like, I guess we'll have to shift the paradigm again and again. Couple more times. I just remember at the time thinking, like, what more of a paradigm shift could there even be? I mean, everybody's awake to the New World Order. Everybody understands now. Donald Trump won. Is that not enough of a paradigm shift? And I had said, I think Alex is right. I think InfoWars has continued to be at the center of the ever-shifting paradigm that's getting us closer and closer, I think, to the truth about our world, who's pulling the strings, and what the purpose of all of it is. So I hope you can support this mission. I hope you can support this successful operation that we're running here by going to thealexjonesstore.com. Without you, we go away. With you, we continue to dominate and shift the paradigm over and over until we get it right one day. One day we'll get it right. Do we have those videos loaded in here? Let's go first to Thomas Massie. This is Thomas Massie on the floor of the Congress asking questions about the attacks on Venezuela. Here it is.
And let's take a moment to acknowledge the contradiction at the heart of this policy. This administration tells us that the Maduro regime is made up of narco-terrorists, and by escalating toward war, we would predictably create countless refugees. At the same time, this administration has moved to end temporary protected status for hundreds of thousands of Venezuelans and deports them back to the very regime it condemns. So which is it? Are we prepared to receive swarms of the 25 million Venezuelans who will likely become refugees and billions in American treasure that will be used to destroy and inevitably rebuild that nation? Do we want a miniature Afghanistan in the Western Hemisphere? If that cost is acceptable to this Congress, then we should vote on it as a voice of the people and in accordance with our Constitution. And yet today, here we aren't even voting on whether to declare war or authorize the use of military force. All we're voting on is a war powers resolution that strengthens the fabric of our republic by reasserting the plain and simple language in the Constitution that Congress must decide questions of war. I urge support for this resolution, and I yield back.
Gentleman Thomas.
Well, can't help but agree. I tend to think this is a mistake, and of course the rumor is that Donald Trump will be making that announcement, that we'll be going to full-fledged war with Venezuela for some reason. From Postmillennial, Trump surrounds Venezuela with Armada, declares Maduro regime foreign terrorist organization. Donald Trump has declared that Nicolas Maduro's regime in Venezuela is a foreign terrorist organization and said that Venezuela has been surrounded by the largest armada ever assembled in the history of South America. On Truth Social, Trump said Venezuela is completely surrounded by the largest armada ever assembled in the history of South America. It will only get bigger, and the shock to them will be like nothing they've ever seen before until such time as they return to the United States of America all the oil, land, and other assets they've previously stole from us. The illegitimate Maduro regime is using oil from these stolen oil fields to finance themselves, drug terrorism, human trafficking, murder, and kidnapping. For the theft of our assets and many other reasons, including terrorism, drug smuggling, and human trafficking, the Venezuelan regime has been designated a foreign terrorist organization. So he's declared a complete blockade of all sanctioned oil tankers that going into or out of Venezuela. It's not compelling to me. Not particularly compelling to me, to be honest with you. They stole our oil. They had the temerity to put their country right on top of our oil. How dare they? They had the gall to live on the land over our oil. How dare they? They stole it from us. Like, what is he even talking about? I don't get it. Now, if you want to talk about narco-terrorism, I think we should be waging war on the streets of America against the people doing it to us here, not some sort of multi-step removed condemnation of Venezuela. I don't buy it. I'm not buying it for a single second. But okay. Meanwhile, Donald Trump, I guess, is on a tarmac somewhere, was asked about Dan Bongino quitting, and he had this to say. Let's watch. You have the Bongino clip?
Oh, Dan did a great job. I think he wants to go back to his show. Yeah,
I do. Okay, there you go. That's what we got from Trump. He did a great job. And now he wants to go back to a show. Okay. I guess you could say that. Yeah. That doesn't make much sense. Nothing nothing makes any sense. I don't know what to tell you. But there we are. There we are. Like, usually when it comes to conspiracies, it's like, okay, the official story doesn't make sense. Here's the real reason. And you give the real reason, and it all clicks together. Right? In this case, in a lot of these cases, there doesn't seem to be a real reason. I can't figure it out. Unless you just assume that, I mean, and this really is where all of the like anti-Israel stuff goes. It really is a convenient thing to slap on any unknown when it comes to American foreign policy. And you're more likely than not going to be accurate. So again, I'm looking for something else that makes this all click into place. When it comes to Venezuela, when it comes to Dan Bongino and the Epstein files, it's like you can look forever trying to speculate, okay, what's actually happening here? Who's actually involved? Or you can just kind of go, it's Israel. I mean, that's kind of the answer, right? Why are we going after Venezuela? Well, it's about narco-terrorism. Well, it's about fentanyl. Well, they don't actually ship fentanyl. Okay, it's about the fundraising. Actually, they are the real power behind the Mexican cartels. We don't need to go after the Mexican cartels. We have to go after Venezuela. But they stole our oil. But it's not about oil. And it's just like all of the – it's just like, okay, is it because Venezuela is allied with Iran? Is it because they provide money through their sale of oil to sanctioned entities in the Middle East that are fighting Israel? Is that makes sense? That kind of clicks all together. Right, this is just another front in the war. It's Lebanon and Gaza and Qatar and Jordan and Syria and Iran and Venezuela, right? Like it's in that mix because it is a supporter of Hezbollah helping to rebuild Lebanon after 2006. Like unless there's something else, I don't know. But that is like, oh, okay, click, right? It all just like slots into place. Like, oh, okay, makes sense. Jeffrey Epstein, Trump is for it. He's against it. He's going to expose it. Actually, it's a Democrat hoax. The documents are on my desk. Actually, they've never existed. There is no client list, and he killed himself. Here's a video. Don't worry about the minute that's missing. And it's just like, okay, so it's Israel again, right? I mean, when they have no excuse, when they have no reason, when everything is convoluted, when they can't get their messaging right, it's because they're all avoiding the giant elephant in the room that's like, okay, this was an Israeli operation on American soil, hijacking American politics and industry and big tech, consolidated with all of these elite Israelis, many of whom are in the Trump administration as we speak, folks like Larry Ellison. I mean, when you have Jeffrey Epstein and Larry Ellison talking about introducing Tony Blair and Marco Rubio because they're both people that would serve the interest of the organization that Ehud Barak and Ellison and Dershowitz and Epstein were all a part of. It's like, okay, well, that makes sense. That all, yeah, okay, that makes sense now. Now all of this makes sense. That being said, there could be another possibility to make sense. I can't identify it personally. And so, you know, people ask why it always goes back to that. It's like, well, because when you don't have a real answer, it's almost always an Israeli-shaped hole in the story. So, you know, that's who we're going to call out. It's very frustrating. We can't just be honest about all of this. All right, I want to get to more videos here. I always pull in so many videos, and I just rant the whole show. Let's go to clip number 13 here. This is typical. This is typical of the left. Minnesota police chief uses religion to explain why he is not cooperating with the lawful authorities when it comes to immigration. Let's watch.
It's especially personal to me, having been raised a Catholic, to be in a Christian church this morning as we are approaching Christmas. And I cannot help but think of what is happening in our city today and how that echoes with how outsiders have been treated for thousands of years, how Mary and Joseph themselves were considered outsiders and forced to stay in a barn. That's what we're getting ready to commemorate as Christians around the world, while all of this fear is happening right here in our town. So my...
I'm sorry, what? I'm sorry, what? What the hell are you talking about? No, Christmas is when we celebrate the birth of Jesus Christ, the Messiah, the Son of God. We don't celebrate the fact that Joseph and Mary were forced to live in a barn. Like, I know it might just, it's like the way he's phrasing it, but like, it's kind of important. The story is not a story of, you know, beaten, battered down refugees that had to rely on the, you know, kindness of strangers. It was actually about people that were blessed by God and protected. Like, when somebody says, I was raised Catholic, that's saying something very different than saying, I am Catholic, right? The insinuation is, I was raised Catholic and I'm not anymore. So here's a guy who's not Christian, not Catholic, doesn't actually believe in this, but he's perfectly willing to distort and manipulate your religion to try to get you to do what he wants. The story of Mary and Joseph, like, this is the most basic thing about Christianity. It's like you have these people that are like, I know all about Christianity. I went to Catholic school for 12 years. And it's like, okay, but you think Mary and Joseph were running away from somebody? You think that they were fleeing persecution? That's not what happened. Actual Christians in America have spent the last 3 weeks reading the Advent story every night, like I do with my children, and it's pretty clear what happened. Mary and Joseph were recalled back to Bethlehem, where Joseph was originally from, to be counted in a census as ordered by Caesar. The fleeing that they have to do is after he's born, because King Herod finds out that there's a king, a rival for his throne, and he wants him killed, and so they chase out Jesus in particular because the authorities are hunting him as a baby, not because they were trying to expel everybody who was, you know, Jewish or whatever. It was Jews doing it. Herod was the king of the Jews at the time. Of course, he was a Roman puppet king, but I doubt this guy gets into any of this. Point of all of this is to say, what the hell are you doing? You're using the Christmas story to try to justify why you're not arresting criminals who are breaking our laws. What? What are you talking about? You misunderstand, misattribute the fundamental facts about the Christmas story as an effort to try to create sympathy for a bunch of foreigners that are here and just stole $8 billion from you. See, the real thing that should be taught is that Mary and Joseph were humble. They didn't even complain they were given a barn. They were happy for a warm place. Like, the story of Mary and Joseph traveling to Bethlehem to give birth to Jesus is literally entirely about, like, trusting in God, having faith. They get to Bethlehem. It's overcrowded, so there's no room in the inn. So the guy offers the barn. And Mary's like, wonderful. Soft hay, my baby will love this. Like, not complaining, not bitching, not demanding, this is the Son of God. He deserves a queen bed. Like, anyway, it would just be nice if these, like, incredibly powerful religious, the iconography, the lessons of it, like, if we actually imbued it, if we actually understood it, maybe we wouldn't be in the situation that we're in. But instead, all these very powerful stories, when told correctly, when actually told factually, are distorted to the point where it's like the Statue of Liberty, right? It's like the Statue of Liberty, the point of the Statue of Liberty, whole reason she's, you know, holding the torch up, facing out into the Atlantic Ocean, was because it was all about American liberty projecting out of America onto the rest of the world. Then some refugee comes along and pins a poem to the bottom of it. Now it's all about welcoming. Now it means the opposite of what it originally meant. And I guess it's our fault for not telling the original meaning, telling the original story successfully enough that people can be tricked by this. It's very frustrating. Very frustrating seeing a non-Christian falsely invoke Christianity to try to manipulate the emotions of Christians to get them to go along with their own destruction. It's actually kind of evil. It's actually like completely blasphemous and a mortal sin, but that's what they're into, I guess. And I guess since we're on the topic, actually, no, let's go back to, because I was talking about Britain before we had that those breaking videos. Let me finish up just covering how utterly insane, and I'm including Canada in Europe. Really, when I talk about Europe, I'm talking about the European diaspora as well, but then I'm also not talking about all of Europe. I think you'll get what I'm saying, because you've got the Western European diaspora, Western European culture, and it is being utterly and completely destroyed. And then you have some places that have been able to resist the globo-homo infiltration, like Russia or Hungary, and they're doing the exact opposite of what everybody else is doing. But in Canada and the UK and everywhere else, you have things like this. Canadian father jailed for speaking out about trans-identified child. This set a terrible precedent for parents everywhere. A Canadian father, Robert Hoogland, was thrown into prison for trying to prevent his 14-year-old daughter from undergoing permanent medical transition after schools socially transitioned her behind his back and courts authorized testosterone injections against his wishes. The state stripped him of his parental rights when he refused to remain silent about the medical risk and the loss of his child. The government moved to silence him by force. Hoogland was sent to prison for contempt of court because he defied a gag order that forbade him from referring to his child as his daughter or using female pronouns. By treating his desperate plea to protect his child as a criminal act, the court signaled that the state, not the parent, owned the child. This is nothing less than the criminalization of parenthood in the face of state-sponsored gender ideology. So that's Canada, just one of the many aspects of truly inhuman horror that they perpetrate on their own citizens. Again, in the UK, illegal migrants to receive Gold Star NHS dental care, as well as dentist appointments, the foreign criminals and illegal migrants housed in these, you know, taxpayer-funded hotels, will also get GP access, general primary nursing care, out of hours pharmacy provision, and health promotion and prevention, including helping giving up smoking and therapy. Some 28% of adults in England, about 14 million people, are currently unable to access an NHS dentist at all, according to the British Dental Association. And according to YouGov data, as a quarter of the population say they cannot get a GP appointment when they need one. Up to a third say they can't get enough, can't get through to their practice, while 21% say they're not offered a timely appointment. So the people of England cannot even receive basic health care because their government-run system. And in response to this, government-run system is actually opening up more and better services for the illegal immigrants. Now, all illegal immigrants receive the Gold Star level of NHS dental care, which is only available to about 25% of the UK population as a whole. Cool. The shocking map of Britain that reveals the true scale of sex crimes by illegal migrants. It's the headline here at Daily Mail. Two teenage Afghan asylum seekers jailed for raping a 15-year-old British schoolgirl shocked the nation in recent days. But the attack by small boat migrants in a park in Lymington Spa also shone a spotlight on the increasing lawless state of our asylum system. The gang rape by two 17-year-olds was merely the latest in a long line of sex crimes committed by those migrants who have entered Britain illegally in ever-increasing numbers, often in small boats. And they've published maps of this. I mean, at a certain point, how many times are we going to be shocked and horrified? At a certain point, you have to stop being shocked and horrified. You have to start being outraged and violent, actually, where we keep being shocked. We keep being blindsided by this constant pattern that repeats every single day. Still shocking, apparently. Meanwhile, a British court sentenced 18-year-old Martina Ogonoska to life in prison for stabbing her rapist in self-defense. The judge acknowledged she was raped, but held her liable for killing her attacker. Her sentence was later lowered to 17 years. Her innocence was lost, and now her youth has been snatched from her by a rotten legal system. So, you can only imagine defending yourself from a rapist, violently fighting off somebody trying to rape you, only to, in an act of desperation, end up stabbing them. And as you're laying there covered in blood with your attacker dying on the floor, you might have thought that the crisis was over. But no, no, it's just beginning. Actually, just beginning. Because now here come the UK police to arrest you for defending yourself and throw you in jail for the rest of your life. I think the lesson is pretty clear. You should probably let him rape you. I mean, I think it's best for everybody. You just give him what he wants, right? That's what Canada tells you officially, so why not? And just to compare the law enforcement in UK, Twitter user is jailed for 18 months for two anti-immigration tweets made after a Christmas market car attack. Those tweets were just viewed 33 times, 18 months in jail. Intoxicated Nigerian man who sexually assaulted teenager is spared jail due to his troubled background. As victim tells court, he ruined her life and she is now scared to walk alone. A year and a half in prison for tweets that 33 people saw versus no jail time at all for violently raping a girl to the extent that she has psychological trauma for life. 18-year-old woman kills rapist in self-defense with a knife, gets sentenced to life in prison. Two Afghan asylum seekers rape 15-year-old girl, gets sentenced to just 10 years in prison. UK is the literal definition of anarcho-tyranny. These are the stories about that, including the 15-year-olds. Here's the one I was talking about in France. New report raises alarm over inspection of Catholic schools in France. A new report published by the General Secretariat for Catholic Education in France has sent shockwaves through the country's educational landscape, reopening the debate over methods used in state oversight, possible ideological abuses, and their impact on educational freedom. Published on December 8th, the 14-page document widely cited in French press compiles testimonies from teachers, principals, and staff in Catholic schools under state contract who report having been subject to what Catholic education leaders describe as abusive, intrusive inspections carried out by officials from the Ministry of National Education. The report highlights that it does not challenge the principle of state oversight itself, but denounces the methods employed, methods that, according to Catholic leaders, risk undermining both the dignity of educators and the very identity of Catholic schools. The controversy erupted just a few months after the publication of the parliamentary report calling for increased oversight of Catholic institutions in the name of child protection. So basically they are, it's a reverse inquisition. They're going into Catholic schools and they're making sure that they're not actually promoting Catholic ideology because they consider that abusive because it's in contradiction to the globo homo nihilist worldview of the NWO religion. We'll be right back.
If you ask Grok, or if you ask a sports nutritionist, or if you ask the nutritionists on the Olympic teams, they will tell you that creatine is absolutely a must. TheAlexShowStore.com already has the very best creatine you can get on the market. Now we're introducing this, and I am extremely excited. Let me introduce you to this bad boy that comes in two delicious flavors. That is the recommended daily allowance of the highest quality type of creatine. Right there, concentrated, the very best. We get it from the top lab in the country, the highest rated. 5 milligrams of this a day. Most people think creatine is just about better muscle, healthier, more stamina. It's been proven. It's been documented. I'll show you what Grok had to say about it here in just a moment. But the first thing you need to understand is that it's not just making your muscles better or your body be able to do more exercise. It's doing all these incredible things for your brain and everything else. And that's really more and more what scientists are saying people should focus on with creatine. And just since I've been taking creatine for the last few months, it has had dramatic effects on my clarity, my focus, my energy, especially when used with ultramethylene blue. Again, everybody knows about muscle and performance, or most people do, but what are the other benefits? Grok says secondary emerging benefits, improves anaerobic capacity and power output, may increase glycogen storage in muscles when combined with carbs. Potential brain benefits, improves cognitive performance under sleep deprivation or mental fatigue, possible neuroprotective effects being studied in traumatic brain injury, Parkinson's, depression, etc. May benefit vegetarians and others who have a lower level of creatine in their diet. Who benefits the most? Older adults, strength and power, people with low dietary creatine. It goes on and on. Bottom line, if you're not taking creatine, you're crazy, and we've got the best.
of a white. All right, welcome back, folks. White Christmas, I again find myself in this position where I just... This story shouldn't need elaboration, but I feel like it does. I'm in a position where I really have to beg you to care about this. Because I could just tell you about it, but that's what these publications are doing, and nobody seems to care. I wish you would. I really wish you would. And it's hard not to just do the cliche thing at this point and just swap out a couple words and read the article, then maybe that would get through to you. The story, if you're just tuning in, new report raises alarm over state inspections of Catholic schools in France. So in July, revelations of physical and sexual abuse at Notre Dame de Bethlehem, a Catholic boarding school in southwestern France, triggered a nationwide debate on how abuse in schools is identified, reported, and addressed alongside similar cases at other institutions. A parliamentary inquiry subsequently examined these cases, highlighting serious institutional failures while also prompting questions about how oversight is carried out at faith-based schools operating under state contract. So this is what the actual inquisition looks like. According to testimonies gathered, inspections have at times taken the form of what the report calls disproportionate show of force. Inspectors reportedly arrived unannounced in groups of 10 to 16, dispersing throughout school buildings without accompaniment, interrupting classes, photographing classrooms, questioning students, and even searching pupils' backpacks. Some teachers describe inspectors entering classrooms without identifying themselves, leafing through students' notebooks mid-lesson, and interrogating staff in front of children. Catholic educators say the nature of the questions being asked has been particularly troubling. Teachers reported being questioned about their personal religious practices, including whether they attend Sunday Mass. Inspectors allegedly examined and took pictures of students' private spiritual journals, their personal spiritual journals, documents explicitly intended to remain private. Principals recount being pressured to remove Christian references from school projects or to take down religious symbols, demands that directly contradict the legal recognition of Catholic schools' distinctive character under French law. How is this being allowed to go on? This is clearly, unambiguously state repression of religious institutions. What else would this be? I mean, it literally sounds like I'm describing the Inquisition. Some random Catholic school in the French countryside suddenly has 16 agents bust in and just start wandering into classrooms, questioning the teachers in front of the children, taking the children's, you know, personal, spiritual, private journals and photographing them for state evidence. It's like, this is pure, unadulterated, anti-Christian state repression and intimidation of Catholics in France. Could not be more obvious. Again, I don't even want to, but it is such a effective thing, but it's so simple to do, where if you literally just rewrote this as if it was French inspectors storming into Jewish schools, taking pictures of what they're writing, demanding that they take down Jewish references to in school projects. It's like, would there be any ambiguity about this? Would anybody be going, well, it may seem intimidating, but, you know, it's just inspections that the state has to do. No, it's clear what the intention of this is. It's clear what the methods they're using are. Clear what the effect is going to be. They are deliberately trying to crush the Christian spirit in France, obviously. And I wouldn't be surprised if the people doing this weren't Christian, right? Just like we see in the UK, where you've got, you know, little girls being raped and going to the police. And what do you know? The police captain himself is in the gang because they want to make the minorities feel included by, you know, hiring them into official positions. So I bet you got a bunch of Muslims being given, you know, state authority to go kick in the doors of Catholic schools and question their teachers. Yeah, we should be against this.
challenging all of you to support the broadcast, keep us on air while you get great products, and it's a win-win. We need funds, we are in the red, and we've got to be able to continue our legal battles. We've got to be able to continue to buy a new product going in the future. We've got to continue with the funding to build the Alex Jones backup network in case they're able to shut us down. I cannot do it without you. So now is the time to go to thealexjonesstore.com and do your final Christmas shopping there. Anywhere in the United States, if you order by Friday, you will get it before Christmas. So get your orders in now. Do your Christmas shopping with us, but really give yourself the gift of health with our creatine gummies, the highest quality type of creatine, 5 milligrams. That's a daily serving per gummy. Huge container of them. Such a great deal. This is the best creatine out there. There's so many other great products and a whole bunch of other sales and deals. You can become a subscriber right now on any product, canceling time, and it's reorders every month and get 50% off on all future orders. The widest selection of t-shirts, hoodies, ball caps, sweaters, many of them limited edition at thealexjonesstore.com.
You're listening to The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at x.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Very happy to welcome my guest, Carlin Borashenko. You can find her work at carlin.substack.com, decodetheleft.com, and youtube.com/Dr. Carlin B. That's DrKarlynB. She is a psychologist turned journalist and anti-communist activist dedicated to exposing radical left ideologies. A former longtime Democrat who shifted perspectives after personal experiences with progressive activism, she's conducted in-depth investigations into far left movements and continues to. You can actually contribute to her investigations live through her platforms like Decode the Left, her Substack, her YouTube channel, and books such as Actively Unwoke. Carlin provides deep dives, undercover reporting, and actionable strategies to counter collectivist ideas. Carlin, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having me again. I appreciate it.
It's my pleasure, and it's been too long, honestly. And as soon as I saw the arrest of the Turtle Island Liberation Front, you were the first person I thought of. What do you know about this group, the arrests that were made? Have you looked into this very much? What do you have for us?
Yeah, I actually immediately went to all their social media and started scouring the social media. I actually archived every single post on their Instagram account just in case it goes away. They had a lot of propaganda on their Instagram account. You know, Harrison, I'm up 2 months about this. First of all, I do think there's something to the fact that I do think the FBI probably gave them the bomb making capabilities, because right, that's generally not something the far left has access to. But the fact of the matter is I do believe that this is a real far left group with experienced far left activists. And the reason I say that is I read through all of the propaganda on their Instagram account, and it is exactly like the propaganda that I see at far left book fairs and in their anarchist libraries and things like that. So I do believe that this is a group that, you know, one of the things so what's striking to me is the framing of the narrative of this being a pro-Palestine group in conservative media and coming out of the FBI and the DOJ. But the fact of the matter is this group is far more anti-American than they are pro-Palestine. That is their modus operandi. In fact, Turtle Island is a reference to the what they call the decolonized North America. So it's essentially a reference to death to America, overthrowing the government, overthrowing the Constitution, giving the land back that was stolen when the evil Europeans came and conquered the land and all that stuff. And so I'm curious as to why the government is framing this as a pro-Palestine group when, in fact, it's really more of an anti-American group than anything else.
Yeah, I had that. We're exactly the same mind, actually. I don't know if you've seen any of my coverage, but I said exactly the same thing. They put pro-Palestine as sort of, they front load that, right? There's a pro-Palestine group that also had anti-American ideas, but looking at their propaganda, sure, you see Free Palestine on their poster, but it's not the primary thing they're concerned about. And as you point out, Turtle Island, I guess it's what, I don't know which group of natives, but some group of Native Americans referred to America as Turtle Island. So it's almost like we're going back to before Europeans were here and calling it what the natives called it, right, is where that name comes from. But then this was, I guess, a breakaway splinter group from Turtle Island, and this was the Black Lotus group, or do I have that reversed? And what do you make of this constellation of Antifa groups? I mean, it's nice to know that they have names, which seems to mean like they're in a conspiracy, which seems to mean like you could go after them with RICO. Am I missing something here?
Well, I think, you know, what people need to understand about Antifa is that Antifa is a highly decentralized organization. There are thousands of Antifa cells nationwide. And like you said, they all have different names, and most of those names do not involve Antifa. So you might see names like Collective, Liberation, InfoShop, Distro. This Turtle Island Liberation Front is an obvious, like, Antifa group, because actually there's a tweet on their account where they openly declared that they're Antifa. So this is not even up to speculation. They were calling themselves Antifa. And so it's one of those things that it's difficult to prove a RICO investigation, though, because the funding for Antifa mostly comes from mutual aid, which is small cash donations that are really untraceable. And so I have a hard time believing that there's any head of the snake that connects all the Antifa groups. But just understanding that this is a highly decentralized model, they're communicating through different websites. They actually have a whole network online called No Blogs, where they post anarchist literature and they share ideas and tactics and things like that. That's usually what I look towards when I'm trying to figure out what Antifa is doing on any given day.
So do you think it's possible to, like, take the – well, let's stick with this bust right now. From Zero Hedge, FBI arrests a fifth Trantifa militant in NYE bomb plot. So it was a New Year's Eve bomb plot. And we saw that they had the satellite or the spy plane footage while they were testing the explosives in the desert. Seems to me like they had somebody inside this group from early on. We know they had a paid confidential human source that had been supplying FBI information for like 4 years at this point, started in 2021. So from what I've gathered is you had people in this Turtle Island group. They wanted to commit violence of some sort. Somebody inside that cell was in contact with the FBI, informed them. We know the FBI usually then gets involved, then will actually provide the bomb-making material because they want to basically lead the person as far down the path to terrorism as they can get before interrupting it and saying we busted them, because you want to get the – in order to get the conviction, you have to show these people weren't just, you know, talking or thinking about doing this. They actually went and made the bomb. They actually went and tested it. So they often let them sort of get far down the practice. What do you think can be done better by the FBI? Is this the best way to do it? Is this the best way to confront Antifa? Is the modus operandi that we see on display? Or do you think there's a better way to approach this?
Well, first of all, they aren't charging these people as Antifa domestic terrorists so far as I've seen. And so I don't even know. I don't understand what the point of the Antifa domestic terrorism executive order is if they aren't going to use it when they have an obvious example of an Antifa, self-professed Antifa group right in front of us. So that would be the first question I have, again, for the DOJ and the FBI. Why is this being framed as a pro-Palestine group when, in fact, this is actual self-professed Antifa? I also do want to say I really take issue with the term Antifa. It's actually a made-up term that doesn't really have a lot of relevance on the far left. And this is important because there is a militant queer activism movement on the far left. It's just called the Bashback Movement, and they refer to themselves as that. And that's a whole other, you know, crazy amount of dystopia. But I actually don't see any evidence that this group is directly related to queer militancy specifically. It's more about giving the land back and demanding the land be given back. Now, what I will say is that this group is representative of a trend that I've seen on the far left over the last several months, where there are all these manifestos coming out where they're basically rejecting the idea of nonviolent protest. And this was really brought on by the No Kings protest, both back in, I think it was June, and then again in October, where they're basically saying in these manifestos, and this is across a whole bunch of different Antifa groups, so it's not just one specifically, they're saying it's great that all these people are coming out and they want to be activists against the Trump administration, but these silly liberals are trying to force us into a position of engaging in nonviolent action where we don't think that nonviolent action is actually going to get us what we need. And so this is just yet another example of there's a big push on the left to embrace violent direct action in some form or another, whether that is setting off bombs in major American cities, whether that's lighting police precincts on fire. Antifa's publishing arm CrimeThink just yesterday released a huge retrospective of the year of 2025 and all the different activism they did. And at the end of that retrospective, they called for explicit rejection of nonviolence moving into 2026. So I think that certainly the FBI was involved in terms of like making sure they had the bomb making materials, making sure they were facilitating all this so that they could get their big kind of like arrest. But bigger picture, even if this was a completely like FBI psyoped operation, this is representative of a trend towards active violence that we are seeing on the far left. And I do hope that people take this seriously.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think that's what we talked about the first time you came on, because it was right in the midst of the Tesla protest. And we were noticing, okay, it's all old boomers going to these Tesla protests, and people were treating that as success, going, ha, we've demoralized the left. And you and I were going, no, 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 they're just not protesting. They just don't think protesting is worth it anymore. They're moving to direct action. And it does seem like we're seeing more of this. Now, apparently this fifth arrest happened in Louisiana. So obviously they weren't there on the ground doing it, but we're in communications. So again, what can they do? Or are they just choosing not to go after these people as Antifa? Because again, it seems to me like we've got these arrests, which is good. Obviously I want these people arrested, just like I want the people that carried out the ambush on the ICE facility in Texas to get arrested. But it seems like we're only arresting the people that are on the ground actively trying to, or actually committing violence against people. And that's like the bare minimum. What more could we do to try to stop the momentum that Antifa has right now?
I mean, I don't want to underestimate, like, for people, the amount of momentum that Antifa does have, particularly around anti-ICE organizing. Anti-ICE organizing has been phenomenally successful for them this year. They are doubling down on it. They've literally chased the Trump administration out of Chicago. Right. They've prevented deportations in major cities. And the thing of it is we have this, again, this executive order declaring Antifa a terrorist organization. Well, every single ICE protest out of every single ICE facility, that is Antifa. Every single time they are handing out these whistle kits in communities to teach people how to warn each other about ICE showing up. Every single time they're showing up at ICE hotels in the middle of the night, beating drums and preventing people from sleeping, or doxing ICE agents as they drive out of the facility by taking down their license plates and then sharing that information. This is all Antifa. This is all the far left. And it is explicit. These groups talk about it online all the time. And so I have a really hard time understanding why the Trump administration even issued this executive order in the first place, if they weren't actively going to go after the groups that are trying to massively disrupt all the mass deportation efforts. And to be quite frank, Harrison, on Antifa websites, they are declaring victory over the Trump administration and only going to be doubling down on anti-ICE activism moving into 2026, because it has been an incredibly powerful organizing and recruiting tool for them. It's also helping them to radicalize people who are more liberal and progressive to the far left. And I think that this is a big area that the Trump administration could be cracking down on very severely, and they're not.
Yeah, I mean, it's just immense frustration as we see these people just flagrantly violate the law, like interrupting the ICE agents, ramming their cars into ICE agents, and the Trump administration just does absolutely nothing. It is not just pathetic. I genuinely feel like it's dangerous, because you're actually teaching the left that they can be violent without repercussion. And we're going to be on the receiving ends of that if something isn't done about this. You know, I want to stick with ICE, but just since it's in my mind, yesterday we played a video, I'm sure you saw it, of this Antifa member, black block decked out person standing outside of a gated community in Los Angeles, just filming everybody come in and out. Have you seen that video? What do you make of that? I mean, it seems like pure intimidation. Like, they are literally basically posting signs outside of gated neighborhoods going, we're making lists to kill you. And it's like nobody's doing anything about it. Have you seen that video? What did you make of that?
Oh, well, I haven't seen that video explicitly, but what's funny is I've actually been on multiple organizing calls where they're not just standing outside telling people they're putting them on a list. They're making entire websites putting extremely wealthy Americans on lists. They're making databases that people can actually go and look up the millionaires and the billionaires in their neighborhoods to stalk them, to harass them. And this is all on the internet right now. And so that doesn't surprise me at all that that happened.
Yeah, it just seems, again, it's like when they have the gall to not even hide it. I mean, and the crew can pull up the video from yesterday. We can play it here, because the guy, he's just standing right there. He's not hiding. He's not in the bushes. I mean, it's intimidation. It's not even just that they're, you know, plotting something. They like want you to know that they're plotting it. That's how confident they are. So that to me is genuinely scary. I mean, when they're willing to do that, that's kind of terrifying. Gateway Pundit had this article today, exploring the legality of anti-ICE resistance training, because this has gotten incredibly popular. Again, like, how do we fight back against this, Carlin? Because I don't want to just say, screw it, the problem's so bad, I want the government going, you know, no holds barred, no restrictions, no judicial review, just crush them. Because I still have that American impulse to go, that's Pandora's box, don't open that. But I can't see what else we do when they're just openly doing this and we don't have laws apparently capable of stopping them. What can we do?
I mean, you're probably a better person than I am, Harrison, because I think the response to this is Trump needs to go full on. Like, I want to see buses going into immigrant neighborhoods and deporting people in mass. I want to see, like, them loading them onto trucks and driving them back to Mexico, because I really think, listen, when you read the Antifa literature, what they're saying is they're calling Trump's bluff, like, overtly on their websites. They're saying Trump may be calling us domestic terrorists, but we don't actually believe he's going to do anything. And so we need to double down on our direct action. And they're seeing success after success after success. And the Trump administration isn't arresting anyone. And I think the anti-ICE thing is a really interesting thing to go down, because actually right now on my desktop, I have a massive spreadsheet of over 60 different organizations. Do you know what they did in addition to doing this anti-ICE training? They set up hotlines all over the country, like hotlines that are just run allegedly by private citizens, where people can call and report when ICE is in their neighborhood. And then the hotline disseminates that information to all the different groups. And all of these hotlines are coordinated with immigrant rights groups. And so if we're talking about doing an investigation for RICO funding, this connection of all of these different ICE hotlines popping up all over the country, and they're also distributing the anti-ICE literature, that I think is actually a much more fruitful route to go down. Go after every single organization that's promoting these hotlines. And by the way, there are government agencies in the state of California and in New York explicitly that have these hotlines on their website. These are not government-run hotlines, but they're promoting them out there to the communities. And so that's something I'm actively working on right now, is to try to map all this out so that we can get a sense of how this national network works and how they coordinate with each other.
Yeah, again, they're not shy about it. They don't feel like they need to hide it. And it just seems like the Trump administration is doing the worst of all options, right? I mean, crushing them, great. Not doing anything about it, not great, not the worst. Pissing them off, saying you're going to do something and then doing nothing, it's the worst possible choice to make. It is truly inexplicable. Where do you think it goes from here? I guess we know where it goes from here, right? Should we start talking about May 1st, 2028? I feel like we need to keep hammering this out, keep letting people know this is coming. You should be prepared for it. There's no excuse. If this actually comes to fruition, there's no excuse. We should be able to shut it down today. What's going to happen on May Day 2028, Carlin?
Yeah, so and I so appreciate you talking about this, because you're the only person that I've seen in right-leaning media that's talking about this, which is what the left is doing in about 2.5 years is they are planning on launching a mass general strike on May 1st, 2028, where they are coordinating across all the different labor unions to essentially shut down the economy. And what I mean is very specifically, the teachers unions are all involved in this. The Starbucks workers unions are involved in this. We see Starbucks doing practice strikes right now to practice for this. We see auto workers are involved in this. Airlines are involved in this. Grocery stores are involved in this. All the different unions are coming together to say, we're basically all going to go on strike at the same time on May 1st, 2028. Now, one thing that we haven't talked about previously, Harrison, I don't think, is that the left is planning on doing practice runs up until this. So right now, we are actually seeing there is a nationwide Starbucks strike right now, where Starbucks workers are basically refusing to go into work. They're trying to convince vendors that bring things to the store to turn around and not do deliveries. They're talking to customers outside of Starbucks to say, hey, we're on strike for a reason X, Y, B, and Z, to kind of soften the public, to get them used to stuff like this. And what I think we're going to see on May 1st, 2026, so coming up in about five months now, is we're going to see the first major practice strike, because they're actively talking about how do we get people prepared to do this and training people on how to do it. They are actually right now, their organizations holding what they're calling strike schools all over the country. So they're actually going into these different communities, and people are going and learning how to organize to strike. The DSA is part of a lot of this. The DSA actually has a salting campaign where they are getting people jobs and organizations specifically to get them to agitate for the unions, to form as many unions as possible leading up to May 1st, 2028. And so they're working to shut down the economy. And I think that they should be taken a lot more seriously than they're being taken. And I think we're in for a world of hurt over the next couple of years if people don't start really focusing on this issue.
And the point of the strike is that they want to shut down the entire economy of America as a hostage technique. They have demands. They have a list of demands, and their intentions, well publicized, it's not us coming up with this, they say their intentions are to shut down the American economy until their demands are met. And they want universal health care. They want all the stuff that they can't win through elections because the American people don't want it. So they're using their positions in the unions and their power over our economy to try to force us to accept socialism because they can't actually win in a fair fashion. Is that about right?
Well, I think it is that, but it even goes one step further than that, in that a lot of these far left groups truly believe that we are in late stage capitalism and the spark of the revolution will happen at any moment. And when I say revolution, you're 100% right. These people do not believe that elections are going to win them the victories that they want. They believe they have to violently overthrow the government. And a lot of these groups are forming right now and just basically waiting for something to happen to set things off. So, for example, back in 2020, George Floyd was the thing that set off several months of protests and riots and $2 billion worth of property damage. They're very literally waiting for another George Floyd moment to happen. And what they're trying to do is they think that this mass general strike in 2028 could be the thing that literally sparks violent revolution against the government. And if they're shutting down the schools and the airlines and the auto industry and Amazon and grocery stores in particular, that's the one I'm worried the most about. I think that they could, you know, agitate enough where they are going to cause a lot of destabilization. And I don't think anyone is really prepared to deal with that.
It's almost like they've taken what they've learned from George Floyd, and now they're like, okay, we're going to do it for real this time. Because the George Floyd protests, as organized as they were, and you had groups, you know, sending people around to different states to organize, it was organized to a degree, but it was still chaotic. It was still kind of madness. Their demands were nonsensical, like defund the police. What does that even mean? So they got concessions, and but they realized, like, okay, we can get concessions. We can activate millions of people onto the street. The federal government won't respond. The state governments will actually help and actually contribute to it. Now all the people that even were arrested in 2020 are receiving giant million-dollar paychecks from the cities in these settlements that are slowly happening behind the scenes. So it seems like they took that lesson. And then, of course, the article has been going super viral recently from Compact Magazine about the DEI and just the total genocide of, you know, working class and middle class white people. They blame it on George Floyd, right? George Floyd was the excuse that they used to transform the newsrooms, to transform the, you know, Hollywood boardrooms, to transform academia. And it's all predicated on this one dude overdosing in Minnesota. It seems crazy, but it seems like they took that lesson and they're going to really maximize the effectiveness of that exact strategy. So I want to get into that more on the other side. We're going to go to a commercial break here. And then I want to ask you, and we don't have time to answer it in this segment, but how do they do it, Carlin? How is the left so organized, so incredibly successful at being everywhere all of the time and being well-funded and being well-organized? You've got strike schools and you've got anti-ICE trainings and you've got phone banks where they're working. And it's just like, we can't even get a protest going. Like, what is wrong with the right and what can we do better? So I want you to answer that on the other side. But before we go to break, the only way we figured out how to do this here at InfoWars is to have the AlexJonesStore.com. We have a very simple setup here. We give you the news. You go to the AlexJonesStore.com. That's it. There's no middleman. There's no advertisers. There's no pressure about from groups or corporations or nothing. If you like the news, if you like the information that we give you, you'll go to TheAlexJonesStore.com and help us stay on the air. If you don't go to TheAlexJonesStore.com, then we won't be on the air and we'll go away and we'll fail. Of course, that's not going to happen because every time the Alex Jones audience has come through and we've not only survived the attacks, but actually been able to grow in the face of all of the oppression. So thank you for going to TheAlexJonesStore.com and I encourage you to go now because after all, Christmas is going to come and go and then it's going to be New Year's and then it's going to be time for all of your resolutions and don't let, you know, a lack of the appropriate supplementation stop you from achieving your goals. I do it myself. When it's time for New Year's resolution, when it's time for me to get my crap together, I usually start with supplements and I go, okay, if I want to sleep well, I need this supplement. If I want to wake up quickly, I need this supplement and I get all that figured out and that helps me actually achieve my real goals. You can do that too at TheAlexJonesStore.com or with Carlin Borashenko on the other side.
Ladies and gentlemen, Nitric Boost, the all-time fan favorite, is now back in stock at InfoWarsStore.com. You've looked at our formula. You like it?
I did, and I do. Yes. Well, nitric oxide is a key. It's made by our own bodies again. It's made by L-citrulline and L-arginine, the amino acids.
And now, a major shipment has finally come back in for those of you that want to be able to stock up on it at InfoWarsStore.com. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Judy Mikovits, without me even knowing she'd gotten it and used it, came on years ago and said, This was the best spike protein detoxer she found.
Just like you want your own body to make vitamin D from the sunlight, you can't force it back in people who can't make it. It can actually hurt them. It's called peroxynitrites. So you want to boost your own body's ability. The nitric oxide relaxes the endothelium, the vasculature. It relaxes the vein. So I use the two, your InfoWars. I keep that on my shelf, and I feed myself the Cardio Miracle, which is just straight food. It's a different formulation than that one, and the two together are a 1-2 punch. So you get in your food the ability to make what you need and no more.
Because of the organic-based compounds that are in it that cause vasodilation in the blood vessels, in the arteries, in the veins, in the capillaries. And it just does so many other great things.
So constricted blood vessels too, because athletes are running, they're constricted, they're working so that the blood flows and it doesn't flow, which is why your nitric oxide product, that new product, I hope you'll show it, because that's a very important thing to have for acute events. Dissolve under the tongue, give you an instant relaxing of your endothelium, your vasculature.
Now listen, it is already a nationwide best-selling bodybuilding product for over 20 years. Bodybuilders take this, it helps grow muscles and better workouts and things. I was just researching and wanting to put something out that was good for the heart and talked to a lot of scientists and researchers I knew, and they said, well, these are the type of ingredients we were thinking about putting out a product. When I talked to formulators, they said, well, we actually already have a product that has that, so we private labeled it as Nitric Boost. And just for men in the morning when you wake up, that's the big thing people feel and see right away. So imagine what else is doing for your body. So for those of you that love Nitric Boost, it's back in stock right now at InfoWarsStore.com. And for those that haven't tried Nitric Boost, you are really missing out. Secure your Nitric Boost right now at InfoWarsStore.com. We're battling in the courts. We're still here a year after the Onion said they bought us. We might actually hold on and win. But regardless, the shopping cart's there. The shipments are going out, and you will get your product. But if you don't order it, support us, we'll be off the air. So it's a paradox. So please take action now at InfoWarsStore.com and experience Nitric Boost for yourself. And listen, men feel it in that one way. Women love it as well. It's good for men and women. Get your Nitric Boost now, right now, exclusively at InfoWarsStore.com. And thanks for being the reason one way or another we'll always be on the air. InfoWarsStore.com, Nitric Boost, back in stock.
Come to the Great Reset. Eat the bugs. You will own nothing, and you will be happy. Take the vaccine. Trust the science. Get your booster. Every crisis is an opportunity, and the world will be reshaped in our vision. Down with the globalists. Get ultramethylene red at thealexjonesstore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is War Room, InfoWars.com, Band.video. We have some breaking news here. It's official. Dan Bongino has announced he is going to be leaving his position with the FBI in January. He says, I want to thank President Trump, AG Bondi, and Director Patel for the opportunity to serve with purpose. More importantly, I want to thank you, my fellow Americans, for the privilege to serve you. God bless America and all those who defend her. So, yeah, we were speculating that over the last few days, and it appears as though, yes, he will be leaving in January. I wonder if he'll tell us the full story. We don't know. We don't know. But we'll bring any updates as we get them. But again, I'm happy to have Carlin Boroshenko as my guest. You can follow her on Substack at carlin.substack.com, and that's K-A-R-L-Y-N.substack.com. DecodeTheLeft.com, YouTube.com/@DrCarlinB. I asked you the question before the break. Had some time to think about it. I don't even know if there's an answer. How does the left do it, and why can we not? The organization is so good. They're so powerful. They seem to have people everywhere. How do they do it, Carlin? What are we missing?
Yeah, there is a very specific answer, and I'm really thrilled that you asked me this question, because that's something I complain about literally all the time. The far left puts education at the center of what they do. They own a series of an entire network of bookstores nationwide where they're doing radical education. They have this outlet where people can go and find these books. They hold events there. They do study groups there. They do event organizing there. They coordinate there, all that stuff. They also have a network of radical revolutionary book publishers. So they're always infusing these ideas of the most far left organizers and activists into the ecosystem. They're constantly giving people stuff to look at. They're holding conferences. They're holding trainings. They hold book fairs. I went undercover at like half a dozen book fairs this year just to get leftist propaganda to see what was going on in those ecosystems. And people might think, oh, you know, it's a bookstore, big deal, or a book fair, big deal. But at the book fairs, they also do panels. They do meetings. It's a chance for them to coordinate and meet each other. And the fact of the matter is there is something on the right that is just deeply opposed to doing basic education. You know, I get people on my YouTube channel all the time when I'm going through far left documents and trainings, and they say, Carlin, what do we actually do about this? Okay, we're watching these trainings. We're listening to the left. We're listening to you break down the language. What do we do? And the answer that I always give them is that you have got to learn as much about your enemy as possible. You have to learn how to break down the language. You have to learn how they're code switching in real time so you can understand how they're showing up in the world. You have to learn their organizing strategies. You have to learn about the thing you're fighting. And then the answer I get from people is, no, but what do we do, Carlin? What do we do? And the thing of it is the right doesn't think that education is important. They have diminished the, and listen, I understand. We have the K-12 public schools that are pushing leftist indoctrination. We have the colleges and universities that are completely run by the left. But I think the output of that is that the right has completely diminished the value of education. They refuse to participate in it. And so we have this situation where the right has a downright refusal to understand their enemy and what they're actually doing. And instead, they want to make up all these conspiracy theories about George Soros funding everything and everything being run by the Democratic Party, when the far left is flat out telling you they hate the Democrats and they don't want to work with them. And so I think that what the right needs to do is they need to revisit everything they think they know about the left. They need to start hinging into reality with what the left is actually saying and doing, because a lot of the clickbait content that I see on Twitter going massively viral, it is not hinged into reality with the way the far left operates in the real world. So the left is operating in a perverse reality in some respects, because they make a lot of stuff up too, but they are so focused on creating that vision, putting strategies in place to achieve that vision, volunteering their time to organize and to get people involved, reaching out to new people, making new people feel welcome in their community, and the right simply just doesn't do the same thing on their side.
Yeah, it's really pathetic. And of course, there is a symbiosis between the Democrats and the left, right? Because while they may pretend to hate each other, at the end of the day, a lot of the things that the leftists are pushing is then funded by USAID or whatever other, you know, government program that pushes this stuff. Because that's the other thing. It's like, I get the time. I mean, is this something that the right could do? Or do we just not have the characterization? Because the other thing that gets me is like, there's something about the fervor of the left. And I always think about this one particular time I think it was the 2016 campaign, it may have been 2020, but you had this person interrupting, I think it was a thing with Bernie Sanders, and they're storming on stage and like ripping their shirt off and being pulled out, and they're screaming, and they were protesting milk. They didn't like milk. They were vegans and they didn't like milk. And it's like they're willing to get arrested and they're interrupting. And it's like, here we are literally being destroyed, like being actually like real things that we should actually care about. And we can't harness the same energy that they can about milk. And it's just like, what is wrong with us that we don't have the fervor that they have? Are we just missing something on the right? Is it our lack of willingness to cooperate with each other? I mean, psychologically, what do you think is stopping us from doing what the left is doing?
I think that there is a thing on the right where they just expect everyone else to fix their problems for them. They expect Trump to be the great savior of America and fix all their problems. They expect everyone in the government to fix their problems. They just want to talk about their problems and meme about their problems and complain about it, but they don't actually want to take action to go out and fix it. And I think also, Harrison, there's something to be said for the fact that the right has completely misunderstood how the left organizes and why they're able to get these mass turnouts for protests. A member of my community once said to to me. He was like, Carlin, the right thinks that the only protest that is legitimate is if some guy shows up on a sidewalk holding a cardboard sign and then other people decide to join him just off the cuff. And that's the only form of legitimate protest. They poo-poo on the left, like actually organizing their protests all the time. They say, this is fake. This is paid. This is that. They convince themselves that these are all paid protesters that don't have jobs, when in fact, none of that is actually true. I mean, a lot of these people are paid to do activism, but they're paid to do activism through organizations that they themselves have started and done fundraising for and gotten money to do this stuff full time. And then they spend months planning some of these protests. They do organizing calls all the time. I infiltrate all of them on my channel, not all of them, but a lot of them. And I think that, you know, the right's perception of the left being totally fake paid protesters who don't have jobs, that actually informs how the right, you know, goes about their own organizing, because they don't think that doing what the left does is actually necessary or even a real thing. And so again, I think this goes back to the right's got to stop memeing and start hinging into reality. You know, I have a nonprofit organization, the Center for Left-Wing Studies, and we're actively planning right now trying to do a series of events in libraries all over the country, particularly in leftist areas, where I'm going to be going in and teaching other people how to go in as well and do presentations about what the far left does and how they organize and their language and all of that stuff. And so we are trying to get people a way to participate in the real world in real time. But I certainly do have doubts over whether or not that's going to be successful or whether or not I'm going to go to some of these libraries and it's just going to be a group of leftists who are screaming at me and not letting me do a presentation. Will the right even show up? I don't know, but I think that things are going to get worse before they get better. And I hope that at some point the right kind of gets their butts in gear and understands that they have to start fixing their own problems and stop waiting for Trump to save them.
Yeah. And I mean, it's kind of complicated, right? Cause I get exactly what you're saying, but there's this weird thing that it's like, no, the government's supposed to be doing, it's like, it is supposed to be doing this. We are, it is, that's our team, right? Cause I've mentioned this a few times on my show when, like, you know, you have TPUSA's doing an event and Antifa shows up there in this big block and starts attacking. And I'm sitting here thinking, well, where's our team? Where's our side going out to fight in the street like they are? And I'm like, well, my team's kind of like the cops. Like, the cops are supposed to be on my team. They're the ones who are supposed to be upholding the thing that I'm fighting for and that I love, the America, the American people in our state and our system. So it's frustrating because, like, theoretically, the government should be able to rely on it, but we can't get out of the mindset, or we can't accept the understanding that they're not out for us. They're not helping us. We do need to do this ourselves. I think your library tour could be a good litmus test. Are we serious about saving this country? And I think we are. And I think if you give people a place to go where they feel like they will be safe from, you know, leftist attack, as well as be able to actively contribute to a movement, I think people will flock there. I think it's a lack of tangible in the real world activity. We're too online. Is that a big part of it too? Yeah. But the left is online too. How much is the in-person stuff, how much importance does that play, like the book fairs and stuff? Is it because it's in person? Is that the part that matters?
I mean, the in-person stuff is incredibly important to the left, and sure, they use online in order to disseminate information out in their decentralized network, but it's not even just book fairs. I mean, they have like bookstores in every major city in the country where they use meeting spaces, people do events there, they do organizing meetings there, and all that stuff. And so the left has an incredible in-person organized network where people can go and participate, and they're constantly looking for opportunities to give people chances to do, you know, protesting or things like that. So the reason that there are so many protests on the left, this is something the right poo-poos, but it's like the reason there are so many protests on the left is that they're trying to give people ways to participate as a part of a social ecosystem in the real world, because the more protests that people go to, the more likely they are to become more radicalized and then engage in more violent direct action in the future. So the left is hyper mindful of this stuff. You know, it's funny because sometimes people ask me like how I can get away with going undercover at so many leftist events when I'm like a person on the internet. My face is on the internet, and I tell them one of the things that helps me is that there are so many leftist events all over the country on any given weekend that they don't know where I'm going to be. Am I going to be at this one or this one or this one or this one? They have no idea because they are doing so many in-person events. And you're right. We should be able to rely on the government. We should be able to rely on the Trump administration to actually write an effective executive order against Antifa that actually defines what it means to be an Antifa. We should be able to rely on them to go and arrest the people doing the anti-ICE organizing or to actually just, you know, go into these immigrant communities and put them all on trucks and bus them back to Mexico. We should be able to rely on them to do all this stuff. But I think what the left understands is that they never relied on the government in the first place because they believe the government, to include the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, is a capitalist government that they want to abolish. And so they actually view themselves, actually Antifa just published about this yesterday. They said, we have to form a network of activism that is completely independent of whoever wins the 2026 midterm elections because that's one of the things. They don't want to rely on the government. They rely on themselves. And so if Trump and his administration actually gets their butts in gear and starts doing things, we should consider that a bonus, but we should not rely on that as our only tactic. We have to get out there and start creating the world that we want for not only ourselves, but also for people who have children. And I firmly believe, Harrison, that if people don't start pushing back on the left in the real world, I do think that they are going to try to overthrow the government in like 10 to 15 years. They're getting all their chess pieces in a row right now. And I think that if people don't wake up and start trying to throw sand in their gears, they will ultimately be successful.
So is that the right tactic to take, is throwing sands in the gears? Like, I guess it's not an either or. We could do both. But is the important thing now to combat their organizing, try to disrupt their networks? Or is it more important now to try to form networks of our own?
Well, I'll tell you what, like the tactic that I've had that has been the most effective is, I don't know if you heard about this. I actually got a communist faculty member at Texas State University fired because I recorded him in a secret meeting, calling to overthrow the government. And then I released it on the internet and that got him fired from his job. But the reason that this was so effective was because of the backlash of the left actually formed major organizations to combat this firing. They were organizing across all these different groups all over the country to get this professor his job back, to try to set the precedent that that people can have communist political beliefs in taxpayer funded positions and they can't get fired from their jobs as a result of that. And so I was actually doing battle with a whole bunch of people on the far left for months. They were doing entire presentations about us. They were really giving it their best shot, and ultimately we won. And the reason I bring this up is it really pissed the left off, and I have not seen the left organize against something like this aggressively coming from the right in the entire time I've been doing this. So I think it's about doing kind of like what I've been doing for, you know, lack of a better idea, I guess, which is going into their meetings, recording them, exposing them, making sure people see what's actually going on, and then following up and demanding that when people are in taxpayer funded positions and they're openly advocating for the overthrow of the government, you fire them from their taxpayer funded positions and you don't give them their job back. And I think that this is something that we've seen the left really rally against very aggressively, more than they're doing with anyone else on the right. So that's the direction I'm going to go down. I'm going to try to expose as many communists as possible and get people fired from these positions. So taking them out of positions of power, I don't know what else to do at this point. So that's my contribution to the cause, I guess.
Yeah, no, it's a great one. We covered that when that happened. It's like, man, if we have to do that one by one, we'll never get it done fast enough. There's gotta be a way to cut the Gordian knot here, cause we're never going to be able to untangle it in time. And again, you know, I actually had on, Orrin McIntyre, because I was arguing with him about, he's like, oh, we already had our communist revolution. And I'm going, dude, have you ever read about communist revolutions? Like, we're talking mass death. We're talking like shutting down the economy for months at a time and rounding people up and putting them in camps. Like, okay, yeah, we have a very communist undercurrent going on right now because we sort of stopped defending ourselves once the Soviet Union fell. But like, when they're talking about shutting down the economy in 2.5 years, and the fact that they're planning this 2.5 years out, and the fact that they'll have all of their actuaries in position, ready to go, queued up on the same script when that arrives, and we're not doing anything to stop it, they're really trying a communist revolution. Can you help expand on like what that means for people that aren't taking this seriously enough?
Yeah, and I gotta say, I'm completely unimpressed with Orrin McIntyre's analysis, if I'm honest about it. And I think the same goes for anyone who says something to the effect of, we've already had a communist revolution, it's already over. The fact of the matter is the left defines capitalism very specifically. Their ultimate goal is always to overthrow capitalism, but how do they define that is what matters. And their definition is private property ownership. It's not just an economic model, it's the cultural model. It includes things like home ownership, land ownership, apartment ownership, business ownership. They also consider parental parental rights to be a form of private property. This is why they're always attacking parental rights, because it allows for the passing of generational wealth. It includes things like the abolition of gender entirely, the abolition of the nuclear family, all that stuff. And right now, the fact of the matter is we still have all of those things. Now, it might be, you might make the argument that it's impossible for people to buy a home, but I mean, is it very difficult? And we should, you know, give solutions to that? Sure. But people can still buy private property right now. Parental rights do still exist. There are many people, the majority, in fact, that do believe that men and women are a real thing and not a social construct created by capitalism in order to create a gender hierarchy. The nuclear family still exists, and these are values that we can defend and uphold. And I think that the more people become aware of explicitly what the left is trying to do, the more it becomes obvious that we have not had a communist revolution in this country. They are trying. They're pushing all of these ideas in public schools and in universities and in their bookstores and in their book fairs and all of this stuff all over the country. But we have to first realize that we do have an opportunity to stop them. All hope is not lost, but we have to defend these very basic ideas, and we have to start getting in the game and going out there and, quite frankly, providing solutions and providing a vision. And I think that this is another area where the Republicans and the right-leaning people have really failed, is to provide a vision for America that allows people to achieve something like home ownership, or to be able to raise a family on a middle-class salary, and to be able to have, you know, mothers stay home with their kids if they want to, instead of just sending them to daycare, using the public schools as babysitting, you know, all throughout their lives. And I think that the right has failed to provide a vision in this regard. The left has not failed. Their vision is crazy. Their vision is going to lead to everyone dying. But at least they have a vision that they've articulated.
It's like shocking how aligned we are. Anybody who watches this show knows I've said exactly that same thing over and over. It's the right's fault for not making the case, not selling the narrative. The left has a very compelling narrative. Yeah, it's fake. It's retarded. It's crazy, but it's compelling, and it's actually speaking to the concerns people have. The right wing just isn't making the case, and it's just beyond frustrating. So I completely agree with you. Could not agree with you more. And it almost seems like you and I approach it from like different. You're a bottom up. I'm a top down in investigating this, because when I see this, I'm looking at, okay, who else is trying to get rid of private property? It's BlackRock. It's the World Economic Forum. It's these billionaires that are, you know, pushing things out. When you look at why 2014 was the year that all the white people started to get fired, it's like, well, BlackRock and Linda Rothschild and the Rockefellers all decided to write letters to all of their investors saying, here's what we're doing from now on. Like, so I see it from a top down, whereas you are there in the grizzly bits down at the bottom in the mud with all the boots on the ground people. Do they not realize, like, how do they think about this? Because to me, it seems so obvious that they hate billionaires and then serve all the billionaires' interests. They despise BlackRock, but agree with them completely on things like private property. Do they confront that cognitive dissonance? Or do they even consider that cognitive dissonance? How do they make sense of this?
Yeah, that is a great question. And actually what it is the left is hyper aware of everything that you just talked about, and they hate those people, and they talk about how much they hate them behind closed doors. I remember being undercover at the socialism conference a couple of years ago and actively listening to them having these conversations. And so how I kind of frame it for people is, you know, everything you just said is true, but the people that you're talking about are playing on a different team than the left is playing, and they may have very similar goals, but how I liken it is like, it's like the Red Sox and the Yankees, right? They're both playing baseball. They both have the same goal of winning the World Series. They're in the same sport, but they're not on the same team. And what that means is they both want the same thing, but they have very different ideas about how to get there. And they're just going to fight at some point. So I think that these two groups are going to fight each other at some point. And there's going to be like all of us that are just like, can we just be left alone and just like have our houses and have our capitalism, have all the, can you guys?
Right.
And then we're going to be stuck in the middle of it.
You know, maybe I'm thinking about it the wrong way, because I'm sitting here thinking, like, why are the people on the ground? Why is Antifa so dumb that they're, you know, working for the billionaires? Maybe the question I should be asking is, why are the billionaires so dumb that they're promoting the same stuff that the communists that want to kill them promote? Why can't, if the billionaires would be on our team for real and help us crush Antifa, maybe we could get stuff done. But I don't know. It's just like, why are all these billionaires on the left? And but you don't tend to think that that's as big of an influence as the on the ground stuff. The George Soros's, the Open Societies Foundation, you're not as concerned with that, because even if that goes away, the left is still funding each other and themselves, right?
Well, I think that that's very true. But the other factor is that I just think there's so many people already talking about that. I mean, there's people like you that have been talking about that for a long time. The reason that I focus on the area I focus on is because no one else is focused on this area. And so I wanted to try to take it from a different angle. And I think that, you know, the boots on the ground information and how they're actually organizing in the real world and the propaganda that's spreading in their ecosystem, what I have found is that it is incredibly predictive of what the left is going to do in the real world. So, for example, I was talking about anti-ICE organizing on the left back in January because Antifa was publishing that they were going to do anti-ICE organizing specifically as one of their primary tactics. No one else was even talking about this until June when everything started blowing up in Los Angeles and things like that. And so I think that's it's incredibly valuable to talk about both angles, and I think we should be talking about both angles. I've just chosen to focus on this one.
It's incredibly valuable, and that's why I love all of our different guests, because usually our guests will focus on one particular thing. I'm trying to cover the waterfront here. I don't have the energy or time or resources to delve into everything as deeply as folks like yourself do. Again, folks, my guest is Karlyn Borischenko. It's karlyn.substack.com, decodetheleft.com, youtube.com/@DrKarlynB, and that's DrKarlynB. And I say it over and over because not only do people always, they always tweet me after, who was that woman you had on? So I like to say it over and over, but also because I think what you do is something I want all of our audience doing. I want them all going out and maybe disrupting leftist protest if you can do it peacefully, but certainly investigating them and getting the evidence and tracking them and, you know, calling your congressman and saying, do you know this is about to happen? They're doing this. So, again, that's why I think what you do is so valuable, because it's an example and you actually bring people in and create a community of people doing this. I think it's great. What are you doing next? What are you working on now, or can you not tell us?
Yeah, no, I can absolutely tell you. And actually, what you just talked about is one of the things I'm working on right now, is I do want to do this Occupy Library series of events that we've talked about before, but I also want to do that in conjunction with giving normal people the resources to come and do what I do, because the fact of the matter is there is so much content that the left is producing. There are so many organizing calls. I can't possibly watch all of it and infiltrate all of it. And so I'm building a community of people where I'm teaching you how to go into these meetings. I'm doing a series of videos right now teaching people how to go undercover at leftist events. It's not as hard as you think it is, and you don't have your face on the internet like I do, so it'll actually be easier for most people. And I want to try to take all the recordings and the materials that we've been gathering and make it publicly available on Decode the Left and through the Center for Left-Wing Studies so that we can start to bring more awareness and also give the people the resources to go into libraries in their communities and to do these presentations where they're teaching people, like, use my content. I don't care. Just show people what the left is doing and what's actually going on. And so that's a big part of what I'm going to be doing in 2026.
Well, it's very exciting, and I think you're exactly right. People need to get involved. We cannot rely on anybody but ourselves, and the left is frankly just outworking us, and that really is the issue. It's not like they're smarter or clever. They're actually almost all very dumb, unimpressive people, but the unimpressive person that works beats the talented person that stays home. Incredible stuff. Karlyn Borischenko, thank you so much. DecodeTheLeft.com. You can follow her on X at Dr. Karlyn B. Thank you so much for being here with us. We'll be back for the third hour on the other side. Your phone calls, lots of videos, and still a ton more news to come. Stay with us. It's The War Room, TheAlexJonesStore.com is how you support us.
Remember, you fund this operation. I'm very thankful to you, and I'm challenging you, those that have supported, love the products, and those that have never gotten the products, to do your Christmas shopping with us. If you get your orders in by Friday, you're guaranteed to get it way before Christmas anywhere in the United States. Okay, because we ship out like a day after the orders come in, and most of the country gets it in 2 days. The rest three, Hawaii or Alaska, I think it's like four. So get your orders in now. The biggest sale so far, 60% off on the ultramethylene blue, on the Shilajit, on the Irish sea moss, incredible super nutrient compounds that just blow you away. You owe it to yourself to get it. Our information's strong. You know that. The products are just as strong and just as powerful. I'm challenging you to support the broadcast. Those of you who have never gotten a supplement, go to thealexjonesstore.com. Make the decision now. Get our ultramethylene blue. Get our Shilajit. Get our bovine colostrum. It's amazing. Experience it, and you're going to be hooked. And then we can continue on the air in a symbiotic relationship. But I need your help. Give yourself the gift of great health, clarity, and focus, and keeping powerful beacon of truth on the air. A 360 total win-win at thealexjonesstore.com. We also have limited edition fundraiser posters to keep us on the air at infowarsstore.com. I can't do this without you. You're not key. You're everything.
Well, hello there, Info Warriors. We are having a 60% off sale on selected items. Take a look behind me. We have the CMOS and Shilajit gummies. And you know, we have the medical grade methylene blue that will light your ass up like a Christmas tree. You can also buy one of me in the store. Act now while supplies last.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the War Room, Infowars.com, band.video. Remember, sharing those links is the easiest and one of the most effective ways to help us and share our content. Just go to band.video, hit the share button. It gives you a disguised link that you can put on X, because believe it or not, we are still prevented from putting our URL on X, even as free speech as it is. And of course, we're on X. Share the links there. Follow me at Harrison H. Smith. Follow at Infowars, at Real Alex Jones, at AJN Live. Now, Carlin Borshenko was just talking about some of the communist indoctrination in schools. Well, it's not always as obvious as you might think. Here is educator Brett Pike on some of the more subtle ways that children's minds are being programmed to accept communism. Let's watch.
The way history is taught in school is designed to brainwash children into believing that America is a uniquely evil place, and they do it by teaching history through a Marxist lens. So take the Iroquois. Schools will teach about the six nations, the political system, the matriarchal structure of their society, the longhouses, spirituality, which are all really cool things, and they should definitely be taught. But what really interests me is what they don't teach. So most of you went to public school. And if I were to bring up the Erie, the Susquehannock, and the Huron, would you know what I was going to say next? That during the Beaver Wars, the Iroquois took out upwards of 90% of them. Now, what do you call it when one group of people takes out 90% of another people? You know, and I know, but for some reason, we're not allowed to call it that. And that's because the history in school is taught through a Marxist lens. So everything has to be framed as the oppressed versus the oppressors. And some people are victims and other people are oppressors. And whoever the Marxist decide are the victims could never take responsibility for anything, because the framing of that ideology requires that the oppressors are always responsible for everything. And history is taught this way in schools because it allows them to brainwash the students and makes dividing and conquering society much easier, with the ultimate objective of turning America's children against the Declaration of Independence, the U.S. Constitution, and the Bill of Rights. And this is why I write books on the First Amendment, the right to bear arms, and it's why I teach courses on the Bill of Rights, the Iroquois, intro to propaganda, and topics like real U.S. civics, because we owe it to our kids to teach them real history and how the world really works. Check out my private homeschool community.
Really great stuff from Brett Pike. And that's what happens. You know, what happens when people like communists take over positions of power in your country and turn their obligations into, you know, secondary things while they have other intentions in mind? Well, here's the result. 28.
The class divide of the future is going to be who can read and critically think and who cannot. Let me explain. What every educator on this app is talking about and what every educator in the field is noticing is a dramatic decline in basic critical reasoning skills and basic literacy skills among students. This is particularly pronounced among high school age students, where they're engaging with more complex material and can't grasp basic concepts or manage basic memory about those concepts. And what this is creating is a generation entering the workforce without basic comprehension skills that is going to make it very hard for them to keep and maintain any form of employment. On the inverse of this, we're seeing kids in more affluent families being not only pulled out of the public school system and sent to things like Montessori schools, but being pulled away from technology, not given access to anything more than, say, a TV or a video game station until they're a teenager. No tablets, no phones, things like that. And what they're doing to fill their time instead is the normal childhood stuff of playing outside, reading a book, coloring sheets, all of these things that seem like play but are actually building soft skills that make someone much better able to navigate the world around them as they get older. The gap is not going to be who can use AI and who cannot. The gap is not going to be who is an all-star on the ACT with a full ride and who is not. The gap is going to be who can reason in a basic way and who cannot. And those that cannot will probably be left behind.
There's going to be millions of them. We'll be right back with more. Stay with us.
Challenging all of you to support the broadcast, keep us on air while you get great products, and it's a win-win. We need funds, we are in the red, and we've got to be able to continue our legal battles. We've got to be able to continue to buy new product going in the future. We've got to continue with the funding to build the Alex Jones backup network in case they're able to shut us down. I cannot do it without you, so now is the time to go to thealexjonesstore.com and do your final Christmas shopping there. Anywhere in the United States, if you order by Friday, you will get it before Christmas. So get your orders in now. Do your Christmas shopping with us, but really give yourself the gift of health with our creatine gummies, the highest quality type of creatine, 5 milligrams. That's a daily serving per gummy. Huge container of them. Such a great deal. This is the best creatine out there. There's so many other great products and a whole bunch of other sales and deals. You can become a subscriber right now on any product, cancel any time, and it reorders every month and get 50% off on all future orders. The widest selection of t-shirts, hoodies, ball caps, sweaters, many of them limited edition at thealexjonesstore.com.
You're listening to The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at x.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. So a lot to cover in this final hour of The War Room. I do want to open up the phone lines for your calls this hour. You can go ahead and give us a call about any and all topics, anything we've missed, anything we've covered that you have comments on. Give us a ring, 1-877-789-2539. We'll be taking your calls in the final hour of this Wednesday, December 17th broadcast, 1-877-789-2539. Now, as we wait for the phone calls to come in, I got a lot of really good videos to show you. I think we'll start with Bondi Beach, the massacre that occurred there when a pair of radical Islamists, father and son, opened fire on the Hanukkah celebrations in Australia. And the more we learn about it, the more horrifying this whole situation is. Not only the utter and complete failure of the Australian security forces to identify this guy as a threat, even though he had connections to ISIS, and allow him to have guns, even though having a gun in Australia is practically a miracle in the first place. And then even once the event started, the police didn't show up for 20 minutes, were hiding behind cars, not actually intervening in the massacre. And when they did finally decide to intervene, they shot the one random citizen that was actually fighting back. And it really just shows you the absurdity of the paradigm we're supposed to accept here. That we're supposed to give up all of our security, give up all of our sovereignty, give up all of our self-defense to a group of people that are either too incompetent or just don't want to effectively protect us. So I think it's called a shattering of the social contract. And we might need something else. So I want to go to a few videos here. First, let's go to clip number 11. This is a survivor of the Bondi massacre, Vanessa Miller. She was separated from her 3-year-old daughter and pinned down by gunfire. You can hear the exasperation and frustration she felt at the cops literally not doing anything. Let's watch.
These police officers were hiding behind a car. I tried to grab one of their guns. One of them grabbed me and says, no, I'm trying to grab for his gun. These men, these police officers, they know who I am, and I hope they're hearing this. You are weak. You could have saved so many more people's lives. They were just standing there listening and watching this all happen, holding me back. Two police officers. Where were the others? Not there. Nobody was there. Everyone, the public, helped. Nobody else. My little three-year-old was saved by a pregnant woman who saw her crying and screaming, Mummy, Daddy, we were there. There was not. Do you know how long did it take for police to come? How long did it take?
It was just...
No, everyone was too scared. Yeah.
Absolutely horrifying. And reminds you of other situations like the Uvalde shooting. Same thing, right? Screaming parents could hear their children being killed inside the school, and the police were physically stopping them from trying to go in and save them. This woman was so, you know, fired up about this. She's trying to steal the cop's gun. She's like, I'll just do it if you won't. Just utter cowardice. Just absolutely brutal. Clip number 12 here is the New South Wales Premier providing an update to the investigation and the shooting and what they intend to do into the future. Let's watch.
I'm also here to report that on the 22nd and 23rd of December, the government will call back the New South Wales Parliament to deal with urgent legislation that we believe is required pre-Christmas to keep the community safe and ensure there's unambiguous laws in place when it comes to public safety. Firstly, in relation to firearms legislation in the state, we are proposing a bill which hasn't been finally drafted, but we will share with the opposition as soon as possible to cap the number of firearms, to reclassify straight pull-up and pump-action shotguns, to look at reducing magazine capacity for shotguns, for prohibiting belt-fed magazines in those shotguns, and crucially removing NCAT as an appeal mechanism once a designation has been made about withdrawing a license from the registered authority. I also want to say today that I am firmly of the view, having spoken with many community members, not just from the Jewish community, but right across Sydney, that protests right now in Sydney would be incredibly terrible for our community. In fact, they would rip apart our community, particularly protests about international events. I completely understand that there are people concerned about what's happening overseas, and of course they've got every right to be concerned, but my worry is about what's happening in Sydney right now. We'll look at, my concern is that a mass demonstration in this combustible situation with our multicultural community could light a flame that would be impossible to extinguish. So we're looking at reforms whereby when there is a terrorism designation in the state, the police commissioner may not accept applications for protests on the grounds that it will both stretch police resources and secondly, add to community disharmony and as a result, a combustible situation in the state.
Okay, so it's almost like free speech and political protest can't exist alongside multiculturalism. Isn't that kind of weird? But don't worry, more gun laws, and now you can't protest. So do you feel safe, Australia? So do you feel safer yet? Don't worry. In response to the terror attack from the migrant against the Jews over the war in Israel, we are going to ban protests. So problem solved. Okay. Interestingly enough, I'm not sure if the Bound report included this, because I know they included the footage from the protest in Australia earlier this year. I don't think it was officially named the Gas the Jews protest, but that's what it was called because people were chanting that. And people have actually gone through footage of that protest and found the shooter was there at the protest. Now, make of that what you will, but maybe you let the people have the protest. And then you keep an eye on him. I don't know. Let's go to clip number 10 here. We'll go out to your phone calls after this. We also have a breaking exclusive. Brandon Morello is going to bring us in just a few minutes. But first, here's a ex-user called Ozpill explaining the absurdity of the Australian government reaction to the attack on Bondi Beach. Clip number 10, here's Ozpill.
Why does Albanese and this government keep talking about right-wing or the far right in the wake of a Muslim terrorist attack at Bondi Beach? This hyperfixation on the far right, the right wing, may have actually been what led to these shooters slipping through the gaps and being able to carry out that attack. In its annual threat assessment delivered by Mike Burgess, the Australian Security Intelligence Organisation said that in the last decade, the majority of their caseload shifted away from Islamic extremism and towards the right wing. So what is this right wing threat that the Prime Minister, the Deputy Prime Minister, intelligence officials are all harping on about? Well, they're probably talking about these guys. And what have they been in the headlines for recently? A police-approved protest trying to register a political party so they can legally participate in the democratic process, and arrests made on their leadership for social media posts by brand new, well-funded national security investigations teams. That is a threat. That is the threat they are uttering within the same sentence as mentioning the Muslim terror attack which just took place in Bondi. If they want to talk about threats, they should start looking at themselves, because they are the threat. They are the people who, through their responses that have been proven not to work, are enabling attacks like the one that happened 11 years ago, like the one that happened a few days ago, to happen again. All they feel confident in saying is something about the right wing and this vague notion of anti-Semitism, which tells us that their likely response to these shootings is not only the gun control that's being tabled, but clamping down even more on the freedom of Australians, because they are cowardly. They can't talk about the threat. All they can talk about is this boogeyman, scapegoat, the right wing.
The right wing that, of course, if they'd been listened to, would have prevented the attack that just happened. Now, with that, I have Brianna Morello on the line. Brianna, you have some inside info about the late breaking news that Bongino has announced he is, in fact, resigning from the FBI. And then there was some drama over the fact that people were saying that he unfollowed you on X, and people were asking questions about that. Brianna, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Harrison. Always a pleasure. Good evening.
I should say, in case people don't know, somehow, Brianna Morello, host of the American Journal on InfoWars every weekday morning, 8 to 11 a.m. What do you have for us on Dan Bongino? We have very little information so far, a lot of speculation. What's going on in the background there?
Yeah, so I've been jumping on and off calls because we knew that Dan was likely going to be walking away from the FBI. His frustrations, obviously, kind of boiling over the last few months now. Now, obviously, this is a very quick departure for Dan Bongino. He wasn't there at the FBI for too long, but he just confirmed what I've been on the call, getting on the call, talking to people about. He will be stepping away from the agency. His final day is expected to be January 3rd of 2026, so sometime next month, of course. He is expected to begin going back to his podcasting sphere again. He'll be stepping back into that space. He's expected within a couple of weeks after leaving the FBI to jump back onto the podcasting side of all of this. He is also expected to be answering a lot of tough questions. I mean, obviously, the audience is very well aware of what's been going on over at the FBI, the disappointments that have taken place. So I'm hearing that his plans are to kind of detail and explain as much as he can what was actually happening there. But we don't have 100% confirmation from him on that front. But we can expect a lot of tough questions to be answered now, as many of you probably saw earlier on X. We got the alert. I got the alert that he had unfollowed me. And so I reached out to Dan, let him know that he's always got a shot on my show specifically, and that if he ever wants to come on to talk, he's more than welcome. So the invitation's out there. From my understanding, he's open to it. But since the unfollowing saga that went down a couple of hours ago, he has since followed me back. Now, as many of you guys know, I've been very critical of the FBI, specifically going after the director himself, because we haven't seen any major arrests. We were promised arrests. We know the arrests should be coming, and we haven't seen anything. So I've been quite focused on the issue on that front. So as of right now, we are trying our very best to kind of dig into this a little bit deeper. But one of the big issues, what I keep hearing, is that Dan was someone who was pushing for the Epstein files to be released. And unfortunately, there was a process that wasn't at the hands of the FBI as to why we didn't get that smooth transition of the release of the Epstein files. And so that did cause a lot of internal friction, Harrison.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like from the outside, it seems like he went in there, you know, bright-eyed and, you know, bushy-tailed and ready to take on the system. And then they've just sort of ground him down. And, I wonder if he feels like his tenure at the FBI has been a success or if it was a mistake. And I wonder how that transition back to being a podcaster would be? I mean, did it seem like, was the impression that you got that he's ready to hit the ground running and tell everybody what happened to him? Has he has stories to tell, or is he trying just to put all this behind him, do you think?
Well, Harrison, according to the source, I mean, he's kind of restricted with what he can say, but he does want to set the record straight. He does believe that his time at the FBA was historic, that they did actually accomplish some really incredible things, and plans on outlining just what was exactly accomplished. But there's no say, there's no word actually what he's going to actually come out and kind of tell the American people as of right now. That's the problem with a lot of this. You know, there are restrictions as to what you could say, what you could disclose. And so we look forward to that. Now, listen, if we get him on, you all know that I will be respectfully grilling him on a lot of issues. I mean, the fact that we have not seen any major arrests is deeply concerning, but there seems to be a deeper issue here. You know, I consistently have reached out to the FBI and those sources internally, and although I've ticked off what I always say is all the right people over at the agency, the reality is the frustrations really lie with DOJ. I mean, they're saying that they're putting together everything and they're trying their very best to put things out there and to get these charges rolling, but there's a process. And that process usually takes place and gets delayed over at the DOJ itself. Now, there's no particular person that they're naming about that. But, you know, he went in with the best intentions. This is a man who stepped away from a multi-million-dollar contract, podcasting contract, to take on a government job, which doesn't pay nearly as much, to take on this position. So I've defended him on that angle for many months now. That I don't believe, I know a lot of us have been very upset with Dan, and we think that maybe he traded this in to the deep state operatives. I've never truly thought that. I didn't like, and I spoke obviously very publicly about how I was not appreciative of his attacks on Miranda Devine, who over at the New York Post has done some incredible reporting on the Hunter Biden laptop story and so much more. She's an absolute patriot, and so when I saw Dan publicly go out there and refer to her as deep state Devine, that was something that did not sit well with me. And Dan's very well aware of that. And, you know, also the whistleblowers. There was an extreme delay in bringing back our whistleblowers. So many bold people who stepped forward to help us out during the Biden regime years. They were being punished, it felt like. And so I tried my very best to advocate for them online as well. And that did not sit well with a lot of the top people over at the FBI. But, you know, these are people who helped us out. And although the FBI assured me that they were going to bring them back, the time frame that it was taking place in was just unacceptable, is my personal view. And so that did take off a lot of people. But we will see how this all plays out. I mean, right now we know that the president is appreciative of the work that Dan's done over the years, or I should say over the months, for the FBI. Unfortunately, though, I just get the feeling it wasn't the type of departure that he had planned. And I'm also, you know, hearing whispers that a lot of this was personal, like personal life issues, not so much FBI related as well. There's a lot of things background wise that he needs to work on there. But again, that little nugget not coming directly from him, of course, it's just something that internally he told by this one source that he's expressed to others.
I heard the same thing. I heard the rumor that it was weighing on his marriage, and he basically said, I got to leave to save my marriage. So, that rumor's been going around a little bit. Well, I mean, to me, he always seemed like a man who was being held hostage as soon as he got into office. So it never felt like he was a deep state swamp creature that he had, you know, he was lying to us the whole time. It seemed like he went in there with good intentions, and the machine just captured him and ground him down. So hopefully when he comes out and is able to speak a little bit more freely about it, we'll at least have some insights into the function that occurs in the background that brings in people like Dan Bongino and leaves them apparently a husk of their former selves. So incredible information. Thank you so much, Brianna. Anything else before we let you go?
Nope, that's everything. You know, we're going to keep pushing and trying to get him on InfoWars very, very shortly. So we'll have to wait and see, but this is possibly something that we could land within the next couple of weeks, so we shall see.
Well, he's not going anywhere. I expect him to still be fighting the good fight from a different position. Thank you so much, Brandon Morello. That's Brandon Morello, host of The American Journal, that you can find, of course, on InfoWars.com and Band.video and on X and everywhere else that people post our stuff. And she hosts that every weekday morning, 8 to 11 a.m., and does a fantastic job, so make sure to tune in. And, of course, she's a complete workhorse. Literally everybody that works here makes me feel like the laziest person ever. And I work my butt off, so that's not fair. But no, it's a lot of healthy competition here at InfoWars, because when you work with really talented and driven people, you feel bad if you're not, you know, up to snuff. And, of course, I don't need to remind you, it's all for you. We do it all for you. We do it all for the American people in our desperate attempt to not only try to inform you about what's going on in the world around you, but also be your voice and actually express the things that you're thinking, that you can go through every channel on cable and every, you know, video on YouTube, and you don't find anybody else expressing stuff the way that we do. You find a lot of people on one side and a lot of people way far out on the other side, but you don't have a lot of organizations like InfoWars that can tell you solidly with the facts what's going on and how to fight back and have a proven track record of success and honesty and forthrightness that's truly unparalleled in the modern age. And right now, you can support us easier than ever before. I don't even, every time we get a sale, I'm like, this doesn't make any sense. 60% off? 60% off? This is irresponsible. Final days, folks, of our Christmas 60% off mega sale right now. Methylene Blue Tincture, CMOS Gummies, Shilajit Gummies, all of them are 60% off, folks. This ends Tuesday, December 23rd. Plus, all other supplements are up to 40% off when you try them once. Subscribers will get 50% off every month for life. This offer ends Tuesday, December 23rd. And I'm telling you, I'm not even playing it up. Like, I know people that will, like, save coupons they get in the mail for 20% off some store. We routinely give you 60% off our products. You genuinely cannot find savings like this anywhere else. TheAlexJonesStore.com. Go there today. With that, we go out to your phone calls. Thank you so much to everybody for calling in and holding while we got that breaking news from Brianna. Let's go down to Sean in California. Go ahead, Sean. I know you're one of the conservatives out there that's actually involved, actually doing things. Tell us about your work, sir.
Thank you, Harrison. Yeah, this last Saturday, myself and other members of the California General Jural Assembly were at a Patriot meetup with survivors of the Tiananmen Square massacre.
Oh, wow.
And also young people who had escaped Hong Kong from the Yellow Vest protest and the crackdown by the Chinese government. So, you know, as Mrs. Borshenko said earlier, you know, the communist revolution, you know, the communist revolution is still going on. We may not see it all the time, but what we saw in Hong Kong right before COVID and during COVID was, you know, it was a by the numbers operation. You know, they isolated the people, they kept them atomized and separate instead of together. And then one by one, they arrested them, locked them up. And in the case of these people who fled, you know, they were able to get over here as true political refugees, you know, on a one-to-one basis. But when we, the people, unite, just like the fingers on a hand, we become a fist. And the California General Jural Assembly, the National Assembly, and your County General Jural Assembly, these are the means that we do have which counterbalance the Antifa cells that you were talking about, Harrison. It's like for everything, there's a light side and a dark side, just like Star Wars, as corny as it sounds.
Yeah.
And when the people assemble, we, the people, assembled lawfully. Under that First Amendment, have the right to petition for redress of grievance, which means you have to show up in person and put a wet ink signature down like John Hancock did on the Declaration of Independence, not, you know, fax it in or telephone it in. And that's the thing. Real world action means real world risk, but there's ways to do it discreetly, just like these folks do. And the difference is, if you're not breaking the law, but you're helping hold up the law, as we would do, then guess what? There's no arrest needed. You have nothing to fear. So,
absolutely, but we're going to lose that First Amendment if we don't exercise it. I mean, the First Amendment isn't guaranteed because it's written on a piece of paper somewhere. It goes away if we don't exercise it and use it and enforce it 100%.
Do you want some low numbers, Harrison? How simple this is, the low numbers you would need to actually get your state going, whether it be Texas or California or what have you?
Yeah, let me know.
Okay, check this out. You want to always be able to have a standing grand jury. That's why it's a jural assembly. So you want to have your 25 jurors plus your two alternates. So 27 members just to get your body up and on the board, send your notice to your governor like we've done out here, and then you populate each county with a trial jury at 13 people per county. Once you have three-quarters of your counties, what we call settled, your state could actually start issuing straight-up directives to the governor, which is what Michigan and Alaska have done in the past, and kind of why I like to joke that Governor Gretchen Whitmer up there in Michigan, why she lost her mind and was so hard against the militia movement, because our roots, one of the things an assembly does is provide bodies for a militia or for a posse if a sheriff needs them. I mean,
give us the URL, Sean. I know you have a URL where you organize.
Yeah, definitely. Go to national-assembly.net for the knowledge and the 10 steps to the assembly and the forums by Will They Make It. And then on the other end, You can go to restore-america.org, and we try to plug you into whoever's in your state, unless you're that first one. And somebody's got to stand up. So if you're that first one.
Incredible stuff. Build it, they will come. Thank you, Sean.
Ladies and gentlemen, I cannot do this without you. You're the reason we're here. You're our sponsor. You are what keeps us on air. And we are launching today through the 23rd of December, the final days of Christmas sale at theyellowshowstore.com. 60% off on our best-selling ultramethylene blue, Irish sea moss gummies, and Shilajit gummies, and more. If you haven't tried our ultramethylene blue that is the strongest, best out there that we found, bar none, you're crazy. What it does for your mitochondria, your energy, your stamina, with no letdown, is insane. It's so good for you. Just research the studies. We have medical grade. We have the best. And you've seen all our guests and others that come in here, and they're just blown away by it, including those who are already taking methylene blue. They're like, wow, this is way stronger, way better. It's amazing. I'm challenging all of you. I'm challenging everybody to support the broadcast, keep us on air while you get great products, and it's a win-win. We need funds. We are in the red. I met with accountants this morning. Not too bad, but we're there. And we've got to be able to continue our legal battles. We've got to be able to continue to buy a new product going in the future. We've got to continue with the funding to build the Alex Jones backup network in case they're able to shut us down. I cannot do it without you. So now is the time to go to thealexjonesstore.com and do your final Christmas shopping there. Anywhere in the United States, if you order by Friday, you will get it before Christmas. So get your orders in now. Do your Christmas shopping with us, but really give yourself the gift of health with our creatine gummies, the highest quality type of creatine, 5 milligrams. That's a daily serving per gummy. Huge container of them. Such a great deal. This is the best creatine out there. There's so many other great products. You can become a subscriber right now on any product, cancel any time, and get 50% off on all future orders in perpetuity until you decide to cancel. The widest selection of t-shirts, hoodies, ball caps, sweaters, many of them limited edition, over 700 designs at thealexjonesstore.com. So my challenge to all of you is this. Get a bottle of ultramethylene blue for 60% off right now, and then you're going to be blown away and reorder it. You've heard all the people call in with their testimonials. This is the real deal. The best salesmen sell the best products. I promote and sell freedom. I promote and sell stopping the globalists. You know my information is the most accurate out there. Why on earth would you think that I would tell you this will change your life? The Shilajit, the Irish sea moss, the bovine colostrum, ultimate life force, spike protein, cardiovascular detox. All these are kick-butt products. TheAlexJonesStore.com. Please do your Christmas shopping there. We need your support. It's a win-win for everybody. You keep this operation. It's a true thorn on the side of the globalists on the air. And separately, the classic nitric boost. Dr. Judy Mikovits, you know, I didn't know she knew about it. She bought it. So this is the best formula for your heart and for spike protein and for everything else. And men notice it the morning when they wake up. It is back in stock at InfoWarsStore.com exclusively. InfoWarsStore.com, nitric boost. All of you need these products. Take action now.
Whoa, dude, is that methylene blue? This house really knows me. Oh, wow, Shilajit gummies. I gotta hide these from Melania. She loved them bigly. These sure taste great, and they're good for me, too. You can buy me now at thealexjonesstore.com.
Ho, 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 ho! Merry Christmas!
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the War Room. We go directly out to your calls this segment. We got No Lock in Virginia. No Lock, thanks for calling in. It's like the negative of Moloch, I guess.
Well, you picked that up really quick, man. You're sharp. I can't call in under my
old name that I've been using for 20 years, apparently, now.
Why not?
You know who you're talking to, right?
This Owl Killer?
Yeah. I don't know why I can't call in under that name anymore. But anyhow, Nolak works, and I'm pretty good with wordplay. So anyhow, so I have a lot to say. And, you know, last week you and Alex both had Patrick Byrne on, and who's the FBI agent that was just on today? The name's skipping my name's on the tip of my tongue.
Bongino?
The ex-FBI agent.
Oh, Serafin. You're talking about Kyle Serafin.
Yeah, Serafin. Okay, so I just want to throw something out here. Remember the – I'm not even going to mention the clown's name, Mr. Watermark Ballot, the guy that pretty much would feed the whole Sandy Hook was a hoax thing to Alex for a long time. The ex-CIA agent that like talks like Hannibal Lecter. Remember Osama bin Laden had Marfan syndrome and died in Dubai in like 2010 or whatever he said. You know mm-hmm. what I'm referring to? Name? Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm starting to know. I'm starting to see the same signs. I can't prove it, and I'm not accusing him of it, but I almost feel like that man was sent in to infiltrate the alternative media, and he pretty much led. He pretty much admitted that he'd been running psyops on Alex on the last time that he was on the show.
Who is this?
I almost think you know who I'm talking about.
Well,
the name.
Okay, I didn't. I thought you were referencing either Patrick Byrne or Serafin.
No. So I'm gonna get to them.
Okay.
Patrick Byrne.
Okay.
Well, he was just saying for the last couple of weeks with Venezuela overthrowing elections and the voting machines, look, if that's the case, present the damn evidence, and that justifies everything that happens from this point further. But he was talking about how the CIA was his red line, and then all of a sudden, the last interview he gives last week, he was working for the CIA. So – but he's never presented any evidence, and it's just like this never – it's like the Candace thing. It's this never-ending it's this never-ending thing that you got to tune into the next episode. And I'm sorry. Like, I love General Flynn, but even the stuff he was saying the other day where he was like, yeah, they just were given a couple $100 million to Ukraine. There's 350 million Americans. Give each one of them $1 million. Like, and he doesn't even get called. Like, dude, that's something a leftist would say, and the math doesn't even add up. And I'm starting to see the thing with Serafin. I think Serafin's, like, his heart is right. But we were told for weeks leading up that it was that lady, the crippled ex-cop that was working for the Capitol Police. And Blank Man gets arrested for the pipe bombs. So, like, nobody has ever held accountable for presenting this information to the people. And it's like, stay tuned. Watch the next episode. Stay tuned to the next episode. And, like, nothing ever happened. So I'm starting to worry that there is a infiltration into the alternative media where they know we're hungry for like something that's going to bring down the deep state or something that's going to bring down the globalists, and they just keep stringing us along, and it just takes up our time. And I'm seeing it now. Like the last straw with me was this obsession with Islam and Israel. The United States, to me, is what the church is to biblical Israel. They were the type and the shadow, and the church was the fulfillment, and Europe was the type and the shadow, and we are the fulfillment. Magna Carta was a good start. We're the fulfillment of it. We have to stop. If you were to tell a plumber, if you were complaining about leaks to a plumber, what a plumber's going to turn the freaking water off. We have it. We can easily turn off Islam. We're separated by oceans. Don't let them in, and everybody that's here illegal, kick them out. Like, it's not a hard fix. What Europe has to almost – they have to accept what they've done to their country and to their cultures, and they have to fix themselves. We have to stop obsessing with it. We have to let that part of the world go. It's the whole thing with Ukraine and Russia, our obsession with getting involved in that part of the world, it's bringing our country down. We have to let the Middle East simmer down, and we have to let Europe simmer down. And we need to take a step back and fix this country, or yeah. We are going to have become.
I agree. And the frustration is, it's like, okay, how do we stop talking about this without talking about it, right? how, because I'm right there with you. I wish we never had to talk about this conflict ever again. It's not our conflict. It shouldn't have anything to do with American politics anyway. If a couple desert tribes want to slaughter each other, why is that a constant headline news story every day in America? It's ridiculous. But then it's like, okay, how do we fix that? How do we get out from that? And it's like, well, you get out from it by talking about why we're in it in the first place. Why is our country so dedicated to Israel? Why is Israel so expansionist everywhere? Why, like, so how do we get out of it without talking about it if we don't want to talk about it? It's incredibly frustrating. Fantastic stuff. I do want to go on to some other callers because I gave you quite a bit of time. We could expand on everything that you said, but we got to move on to other callers. Thank you for the call, No Lock. Very powerful stuff. Let's go to Max in Wisconsin now. I want to talk about general chaos. Go ahead, Max. You're on the air.
Hey, Harrison. Yeah, I think a lot of what you're kind of griping over and dealing with right now, along with many other people, is just like the chaos nature of Trump. I think that's like his MO, that he's like a chaos and order guy. And, you know, other people like Fuentes talks about how, you know, Israel's the big elephant in the room, but, you know, he kind of has tunnel vision because there's a lot of different groups, like Alex Jones says, that are in the mix, you know, all around the world. And it's kind of like a battle right now for the story of the future. Like the most important job in the world now is like the storyteller, and which story is going to become this new era we're going into. And it's actually crucial for our demographic, as white Christian males, because I think now is like the most important time in Christianity's growth, where Christianity can grow exponentially with the advent of AI, and AI also being able to hopefully solve unsolved mysteries of the Bible and bring us the stars.
It's an inflection point, right? It's either going to Christianity's going to flourish or be crushed, but it's going one way or the other.
Exactly. And it's kind of like tough to watch because it's a never-ending battle. I don't think there's ever going to be an end, you know, that it's just going to be a back and forth, you know, until the end of time, because that's like part of the grander narrative and systemics that they've built for us here. And Trump is more of, he's playing the game that is set on the board of the world. He's not really being that much of a game changer. You talk a lot about like changing the game completely and overthrowing the table. And I understand the feeling now it's a cruel world and cruel system that's set up. But I think it's just going to be more of this. And I think the most important thing we should do is focus on unity, you know, because the only unity is going to save us if we're chopped into a bunch of little pieces and there's no team and no flow state, then I think we're just going to get eaten up. So I think only unity is going to save us, really. Obviously, also Christianity and Jesus Christ, but, you know, that's a whole different
story. That's the double-edged sword of unity. It's like, well, we do need unity, but with who? And what does unity look like? Unity often looks like submission when it comes to Christianity unioning with anybody else. So, we're in a tough spot, I guess you could say, but the chaos is not going anywhere anytime soon. And when it comes to like playing the game, I mean, I was actually just thinking about this metaphor earlier today. I used to say it a lot more, but just the idea is it does feel like we're all sitting around playing Monopoly, only we've all bet our lives on the game. And as we're playing, like every couple of minutes, it's like revealed like, oh, that other player over there, by the way, he stole like $8,000 from the bank. That's why he's doing so well. And it's like, well, what the hell? And it's just like we keep learning that everybody else at the table is cheating. And it's like, okay, when do we flip the board? Because we can't keep playing when it's this rigged. And when people get caught, they don't get punished. And then the bank is just handing money to the people that they want to win. And we're sitting here trying to obey every single rule. And so, of course, we're losing completely. So at a certain point, it's like we have to stop playing. We have to stop playing. When we're the only ones that abide by the rule, why are we playing the game? It makes no sense. So it's frustrating. Let's go to, I want to go to Ali in California now on line six. Ali, you are a Muslim. Want to give your take on the conversation going on? Thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing, Brother Harrison?
Good, thank you.
Hey, so I'm from Yemen. I don't know who, like, I've met a lot of people. I know a lot of Muslims, you know, my whole family and friends, and it's like, I don't know who these Muslims are that they're saying are calling for jihad. I never seen them. I went to a lot of mosques in my life, you know, in California and in New York, and I have never met an imam that says that. I mean, obviously the guy on TV that they showed, he did say it, right? But is he some kind of, like, FBI agent or something, or somebody's telling him to do it? Because I have never heard it, and I'm 37 years old. I go every Friday, and the only thing I can say about Muslims, they just don't do too much politics, and they just want to work, man. I haven't met one guy, one Muslim, who doesn't want to work. He's like a... Man, it's like, where are they getting these guys from? And it's like they're putting them on there on purpose and recording them saying the thing, because I'm serious, man. I've been looking for these guys for so long, and I cannot find one Muslim that does that speaks like that. Even when I was in Yemen, there was one guy, I'll tell you about this, one imam, he started telling people inside the mosque, send your kids to Sa'dah. Sa'dah is an area where the Houthis started fighting. That's where it all began. And everybody in that mosque got up and told the guy, hey, you send your kids, leave us the hell alone. And everybody started getting really mad at him. I don't know what's going on, man. You know?
Well, I think definitely a part of it is, you know, every religion obviously has people on a spectrum, and you're going to get the Muslims who, you know, the faith pays a part in their life in the same way Christianity does in most American lives and aren't really going to care. And then you're going to have the radical sects that obviously are, you know, involved in the conflicts overseas and stuff like that, or they want to bring it here and are motivated by that. And I don't think you're wrong when you say, like, it sounds like they picked these people on purpose. I mean, it's not a coincidence that, like, most of the Muslims that went into Europe and, like, the UK are from the, like, most radical and most backwards and this, like, you know, Saudi Arabian style 7th century version of Islam. Like, they chose those people on purpose. They weren't choosing the engineers from Iran, right? Like, that are more moderate. So I don't think you're wrong. And I think, you know, it can give an inaccurate impression if you focus on those groups. But I think those are also the groups that are deliberately being brought in to cause problems, to cause strife, to cause division. I mean, I think that's all part of the operation. Ali, does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It makes a lot of sense, obviously. The ones that are going to Europe, I think, man. But,
like, they're
man,
crazy.
I want to say about the when Donald Trump, I don't know if you remember, well, I'm pretty sure you remember, when he went to Michigan and met up with all the Muslims over there, there's a lot of Yemenis out there, a lot of them, right?
Right.
And all they wanted from him was to stop the wars. And then I don't know if you recall, one of them was going to be like in a certain position, ambassador to the UN or something, and Israel or some of the Israeli operatives in the Trump administration right away cut him off. I don't know if you recall that.
Are you talking about it? Because I think it's Tiffany's father-in-law. Tiffany Trump's father-in-law is a Lebanese Christian. I think he was going to be an envoy to Lebanon or something like that. Is that what you're talking about, or is there a different one?
It was with Owen. It was a Yemeni mayor of some small town out there. Something he was going to be some kind of like a peace ambassador. So I don't know, but I can tell that. I know Alex doesn't want to say it, but look, Israel is knee deep in all around Donald Trump. They got everybody around him. he's surrounded, and you can tell, and I've met a lot of Israelis, they are instigators, man. They can divide you from your friend like that. It's crazy how they do it, man. And the way they push them away from Elon and away from this lady, MTG, you can tell, like, man, you can really see it. If you just open up your eyes, you can see it, man. It's like, it's not about America anymore.
Well, that is the frustration, and that's why we talk about it so much, because it's not even like I have a problem with it. It's just like so clearly a barrier to us doing what we want and what we need in this country. Well, thank you so much for the call, Ali. I really appreciate that. And I do like hearing from, and I sort of think it goes without saying, but I guess it needs to be reasserted. But again, it's like, if you actually feel this way, it actually feels weird to say it. That makes sense. Like, if I really was a hateful person, it'd probably be very easy for me to lie about it, because I'm like being tricky. But it's like, I genuinely, like, we at InfoWars, like, we genuinely love everybody. We're able to talk about racial or religious things, and sometimes we paint with a broad brush, but at the end of the day, it's because we're trying to express a larger thought. And it's just true that in our personal lives and in our professional lives, there's no like judgment of an individual ever on the basis of their immutable characteristics, where they come from, who they are, what religion they have. It doesn't really matter at the end of the day. And if you do think it matters, you're going to just be incorrect on a lot of things. And it's just one of those things, like, you're going to be kind of made a fool of if you actually have these like hardline beliefs about like all Jews bad, all Muslims bad. Like, there are going to be times, like in Australia, where the one guy who rushes in and heroically tries to stop the shooting happens to be a Muslim guy, happens to be a dude from the Middle East. It's like, there really aren't boxes you can fit everybody in. Now, that being said, trends occur with populations. Populations themselves have characteristics that manifest more likely than others. So we have to be able to talk about this stuff. Talk about people as groups, talk about nations and characteristics, these types of things. We have to be able to be honest about this stuff. And it can be like impossible to even have these conversations if you're constantly having to be like, but we actually love Muslims. It's like, I kind of just assume that you take it for granted that like, I'm a Christian American millennial. Like, yeah, I grew up with all the propaganda and I bought it, and I still maybe, you know, in ignorance, believe that every human being really is worth the same value in the eyes of God. So, you know, sorry if we're offensive sometimes, but it all comes from a place of love. And I do hope people understand and realize that. Let's go to JD in Missouri now, because he wants to talk about the obsession of Israel. JD, thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Hey, Harrison. Yeah, I've got two quick points and then I'm going to jump off of here. Number one, I think that while Alex is obsessing over people who are obsessed with Israel during his daily rants, it would be nice for him to primarily call out the person who's the most obsessed with Israel, which is Donald Trump. I think Donald Trump's obsession with Israel is much more destructive and divisive than your average podcaster's obsession with Israel.
That's kind of the thing, isn't it? I want you to get to your second point, but that is exactly the point, is it's like, I would never talk about Israel ever again if I didn't want to. But in the last 2 days, I mean, I haven't gotten into any of the videos about Israel. I played this one, right? Mark Levin saying he's the first. Like, I got four videos from this event. I've got Jonathan Greenblatt on four different shows calling for ex-censorship. The American Jewish Committee CEO Ted Deutsch talking about an anti-Semitism czar. I've got a pro-Israel activist calling for strong action against anti-Semitism, Barry Weiss, CBS News. Pro-Israel activist Shin Yadegar on Fox News that Bondi Beach is what happens when you allow hate speech to go viral. More censorship calls. I've got comments from Netanyahu demanding that Western governments provide safety. You know, it's like somebody else just did a study or just looked at the facts and saw Ted Cruz. 25% of his tweets are about Israel. 25%. The man is a senator from Texas, and 25% of the time, he's blowing Israel on X. And it's like, am I not supposed to talk about this? Everybody else is obsessed with it, but it's not considered obsession when it's positive. So, sorry to interrupt, JD, but that is such a good point. The people obsessed with Israel are the pro-Israel people, and if they would shut up, then so would we. Sorry to interrupt, JD. Continue,
right.
Please.
No. No, you're exactly right. It's totally ridiculous. And that leads into my second point, which is that if any reasonable person were being assaulted by four attackers, let's say, and one of those attackers had this person pinned down with their arms held behind their back, wouldn't that person understandably be more focused on the one attacker that has them pinned down with their arms held behind their back, since they don't have any hope of defending themselves against the other three attackers until they're free from the grip and back on their feet?
Right.
I think that the highest priority of that person would be to free themselves from that grip so that they can defend themselves against all four. And if that victim were hyper-focused on that one attacker that's pinning them down, would we really accuse them of being obsessed with that one attacker or of being a low IQ retard because they aren't more focused on the other attackers? I don't think so. So who honestly believes that our country has a chance against multiple aggressors, such as the globalists and China and Russia and jihadists and drug cartels, when we're being disproportionately infiltrated, controlled, robbed, demoralized, manipulated, dumbed down, and disabled by one specific aggressor as the other ones are closing in on us? Virtually no one who's obsessing over Israel believes that Israel's the only problem that we have or that the other aggressors against our country are somehow not as dangerous. In my opinion, most Americans who are being accused of obsessing over Israel are simply performing an honest threat assessment, and they're focused on prioritizing our biggest problem at the moment, which is the aggressor that has us pinned down with our arms held behind our back.
I get what you're saying. I agree with you to a certain point, and I'll say some things to sort of expand on what you're saying. On the other hand, there's nuance to it, right? Because the other thing is that, like, to take your metaphor, you know, we're struggling to get out of the guy who's got us in an arm bar, but then we'll, like, lash out with a kick at somebody else, and then it's like, you know, our allies are like, well, what are you doing? Stop attacking him. Go with the guy with your arms. And it's like, no, we're trying to fight all of them. Yes, some are maybe more like impactful than others. And, you know, we have to prioritize, triage exactly what we're fighting when, but it is possible and actually necessary to fight all of these all at once. And there is a trend with people who are obsessed with Israel to downplay all of the other threats. So again, it's not to say that everybody who talks about Israel does that, but that is a trend. And I do see people, you know, downplaying the threat of Islam, downplaying the, you know, attempt of Muslims to take over certain places. Again, you can be against both these things. It's not hard. Now, the other thing I think contributes to the point that you're making is that the other big threats like China, China doesn't have to do anything. China's looking at the world as it stands now and the trajectory that we're on, and China's going, we just have to sit back and relax for 30 years. America will destroy ourselves. In fact, one of the only ways that we get out of the cycle of destruction that we're now in is with some big war with China. I think China is actually going to try to not go to war with America because they know that that would give America a chance to reorganize and reinvigorate their manufacturing and have, you know, American pride. It's like the way it is now, China just has to twiddle its thumbs and hang in the background, and America is destroying itself. So if we don't solve that, China's not even going to have to be a threat. We're destroying ourselves. That's the process we have to stop. Then we can worry about China. So I agree. We'll be back tomorrow, folks. Don't go anywhere. It's InfoWars. Share those links. TheAlexJonesStore.com.
Remember, you fund this operation. I'm very thankful to you, and I'm challenging you, those that have supported, love the products, and those that have never gotten the products, to do your Christmas shopping with us. If you get your orders in by Friday, you're guaranteed to get it way before Christmas anywhere in the United States. Okay, because we ship out like a day after the orders come in, and most of the country gets it in 2 days. The rest three, Hawaii or Alaska, I think it's like four. So get your orders in now. The biggest sale so far, 60% off on the ultramethylene blue, on the Shilajit, on the Irish sea moss, incredible super nutrient compounds that just blow you away. You owe it to yourself to get it. Our information's strong. You know that. The products are just as strong and just as powerful. I'm challenging you to support the broadcast. Those of you that have never gotten a supplement, go to the AlexJonesStore.com. Make the decision now. Get our ultramethylene blue. Get our Shilajit. Get our bovine colostrum. It's amazing. Experience it, and you're going to be hooked. And then we can continue on the air in a symbiotic relationship. But I need your help. Give yourself the gift of great health, clarity, and focus, and keep a powerful beacon of truth on the air. A 360 total win-win at thealexjonesstore.com. We also have limited edition fundraiser posters to keep us on the air at InfoWarsStore.com. I can't do this without you. You're not key. You're everything.
Well, hello there, Info Warriors. We are having a 60% off sale on selected items. Take a look behind me. We have the sea moss and Shilajit gummies. And you know, we have the medical grade methylene blue that will light your ass up like a Christmas tree. You can also buy one of me in the store. Act now while supplies last.